Blog Talk Radio.
I went to a number of women's groups and said, can you help us find folks? And they brought us whole binders full of women.
Well, a binder full of women.
A binder full of women.
I don't know how high we are up on this blog talk because we had a connection problem again.
Imagine that.
So why don't you give us a call here, see if you can call in.
Right,
because I can't tell. I'm looking at this. I can't tell if we're up online or not. Well, everybody out there, no, give us a call on your cell phone. And I see my name is up there on the board, but I don't know what that means.
Your name?
Because I can't see Skype. Skype is, I don't know what Skype is doing. Oh, yeah, now Skype is coming up. Let's see. I should be up, I guess. Let's try to call in on Skype, ladies and gentlemen. Just bear with us here. We have a Skype problem again. I don't know why you're liable to hear a little. I guess that's up there. Let's see here.
So
just call in on our line and see if we're up here. Let's see here. Let me go to the, yep, 1-2. I'm online. I think so. But call.
I'm calling.
You call? I don't hear nothing. Are you in? Let me see if your number comes up. I don't see you calling yet. What's it doing? Ring it? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I see the phone. And let me see who this is calling here. Is it
who I think it is?
It is who I think it is. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
We're up and running, ladies and gentlemen. So now, huh? Well, it came up because I just talked you out, just took you off. Dial it again. Let's make sure. Now, I want everybody to hear this. Yeah, cool.
Let's go.
All right.
Relax.
Okay. Now, listen to this.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, it is now 3:08. We had a problem with Skype. I have no idea what happened, but we're back up and running now. This is the last word. It is October 26, 2012, and we are broadcasting live from beautiful Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, I had a couple of things I wanted to do for the first 9 minutes of the show that we had a little, I don't know, kaflump. Is that what it is?
Well, that's all right.
Is that what we had? But we are going to dedicate this show. We got a big show up and coming here. We're going to have Lieutenant Governor Linda Coleman calling in shortly. We are going to have, she's the Democratic candidate for Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina. We're also going to have.
Did we find her in a binder?
No, she was not in a binder.
I think she's actually qualified. And we
yes,
enjoy.
She is
successful women.
That's right. Absolutely. We're also going to have the head of the main man in North Carolina who controls the insurance and the fire marshal, the fantastic Wayne Goodwin, calling in about 4 o'clock. He's running for re-election. We're also going to have someone who knows more about what's going on in Charlotte, North Carolina than anybody that I know, Pat Cotham. And she's going to be on with us. She's also running for office. We are also going to have Nancy Shacker, who ran against Larry Kissel a few years back. And she's going to tell us about the new things that she's involved with. She's also on the campaign for Antonio Blue, who's a running candidate for the 8th Congressional District.
True Blue.
True Blue.
So we got
Yes. Go ahead.
Bring back the judge today or not?
We're going. Oh, I forgot. We're also going to have, and I just saw last night.
Dun, dun.
Oh, gosh.
One
please.
Of our favorite judges.
One of our favorite judges.
About knowing things. This lady knows more about families and children's rights than anyone I've ever met.
I'm telling you. Absolutely. And,
Close
our phone. My phone's working, at least.
Yep.
Yes, we're going to have Charlotte Brown. Judge Charlotte Brown. And she's going to be on the show. So we have a full-blown show here. And just want to tell you, nothing is so common as the wish to be remarkable. What do you think about that?
Nothing is so common?
As the wish to be remarkable. Now, who do you know fits that?
Who could it be?
Who do you know who wants to be so remarkable that they will do anything
or
say anything to get elected in this country? I mean, it is becoming so outrageous. He fantasizes about... Well, let me give you a little hint. He fantasizes about being president of the United States.
Ooh.
Let's see. Let's see if this might give you a clue.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
The shadow and the mister knows.
Oh, no, the
will it Mitt Romney? I mean, this man will say anything at any time because he doesn't believe you know what he says from one day to the next.
Is it that he doesn't think people listen or doesn't think this, you know, century, you know, he does live in the 1950s time warp or something, but does not think that we have recording devices and people listen, or does he simply not care?
It's a combination of them all. Let me give you a little hint. This is what he said about women in the workforce.
I recognize that if you're going to have women in the workforce, they need to be more flexible. Like the staff, for instance, I had two kids that were still in school. She said, I can't be here until 7 or 8 o'clock at night. I need to be able to get home at 5 o'clock so I can be there for making dinner for my kids and being with them when they get home from school. So he said, fine, let's have a flexible schedule so you can have hours that work for you. We're going to have employers in the new economy, in the economy I'm going to bring to play, that are going to be so anxious to get good workers, they're going to be anxious to hire women.
Now,
I recognize that if you're going to have women in the workforce, that sometimes they need to...
This man thinks that women need to rush home and cook dinner. You talk about 1940s, 50s.
Yeah, well, to be fair, he's thinking they need to rush home because, actually, in his worldview, most women should already be home.
Well,
there would be no rush. He's saying, well, if you have to go out to work, you know, rush home, hurry up.
Well, I want to show you.
Does that mean you have the apron in the car?
Yes, that's well, it's just like, now, let me show you this. I want to show you the proof of this. Here is Ann Romney, who I first liked. But she is as bad as he is. She took people on a shopping tour of Costco, like she shops at Costco. Give me a freaking break. If you believe that, she said that he's the cheapest man she ever knew. We don't know how many men she's ever known. So here's the thing. She went on she was on the Rachel Ray show, the cooking show, and she was, they went grocery shopping. Now come on, This woman goes grocery shopping. Anyway, she says that she went zooming around with the shopping cart, grabbing bags of spinach and several containers of frozen cream puffs and pre-cooked rotisserie chicken. Okay?
And you don't have to cook?
She said, the great thing about frozen desserts is that they're ready to go. And she laughed. She says, it's easy to go here at Costco. She said, because I spent $137.50. And I not only can feed my five sons, but I can feed the entire clan when they come over. And that's 30 people. Now, look, I went to Food Lion the other day, not thinking about my two kids, their husbands, and their two grandkids coming over. I spent $149, and I just barely filled up, didn't even fill up my refrigerator. Didn't get everything. I just went in there really for a couple of things, and I bought a couple of things. That was not at Costco's, at a discount place. Now, this is a billionaire, and you're telling me they're shopping at Costco's? Well, maybe that's why they're a billionaire. They don't spend any money. But I don't believe that. That's bull.
It's BS.
I bet you someone gave her that Costco card.
Yeah,
this is ludicrous. She spent, and it comes roughly to $4.50 a person. They are just trying to prove that they're one of us. Mm-hmm. They're not one of us.
That would be like we dropped by the McDonald's or Taco Bell on the way into this.
Yes.
You know,
right.
Debate.
She said, said, and Mitt is not a picky eater. He will eat anything put in front of him.
No, finish that little thought out.
I'm not talking. All I know, this is what she said. She said her husband also cuts in front of the line during the family buffet.
Now, let me get that straight. So, he cuts in front of women and children. Right?
Women and children last.
Hey.
Women and children last.
Yeah, including his whole family. I love it.
Including his family.
There's some values you can stand in line behind.
I mean to tell you, it is unbelievable. Well, hey, what can you say? What can you say about someone like that?
You know what you can say? Hey, Mike, you can say, what's that scanner thing on at the checkout line? What's
now,
that,
let's see. Who's,
why does it just beep when you put it?
Who said, who's, you know, it, this is the reason why he said this.
I went to a number of women's groups and said, can you help us find folks? And they brought us whole binders full of women.
Binders full of women. And now you know why he says things like that. Because his wife also is from the 1950s. She had five children, and I guess she doesn't take birth control anymore because she must have had a hysterectomy or maybe – what are they doing anyway?
Well,
how can they have any more kids? They don't do anything anymore?
The
they just
plan,
don't play around anymore?
The master's plan?
They don't go to drive-ins anymore, I guess. Huh?
They practice prayer sessions. I don't know. Listen, my key phrase and all that, I can – care less about their bedroom because, unlike them, I don't care what goes on in their bedroom. You know, they can be 50 shades of.
Yeah, but they want to know what's going on in mine.
Yeah, well, that's their business. They can pry into.
No, it's not their business. It's my business. I don't want them knowing what's going on in mine.
Here's the thing that bothers
me. I had a couple of drinks.
Statement.
What that?
He says, if the key word is if you must have women in the workplace, that is a statement.
Well, we didn't get there yet. We were going to get there.
You couldn't have women.
Right. That's the thing.
See, that's an entire mindset. There's a worldview there that is so alien to this century.
And see, this is the reason why I said, if you have women in the workplace. Because he also said this.
Should health insurers have a birth control?
Health insurers can now. Health insurers have. It's a question as to should you get a car painted, you know, red or blue. I mean, you can decide what you like. People who want to have contraceptive health insurance can choose that in their policy.
He also said this.
I would welcome a circumstance where there was such a consensus in this country that we said we don't want to have abortion in this country at all, period. That'd be wonderful. I'd be delighted.
Francis, would you sign that bill?
Let me say it. I'd be delighted to sign that bill.
So that's the reason why the women should be home, because they're going to be pregnant all the time.
Mm-hmm. And you really don't need health care or any kind of women's health.
No, because you have a midwife come in.
No.
You don't go to the hospital. You have the baby in the house.
You got a closet full of coat hangers. You're good. It's fine.
Oh, well, the midwife.
Of course, you know what?
Yes.
Times have advanced, and it might be harder because now they're all plastic coat hangers.
Ah.
That could cause problems.
No.
Now, look, this is just 19th centuryism, you know, good old Victorian lifestyles creeping in. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't know which century he's from, but why is it coming back?
Well, you just hold that thought. We have to pick up our call here.
A call.
Hello there. Who's this?
This is Linda Coleman. Hi, Michael.
Linda Coleman. I just met your name a few minutes ago.
Oh, I hope it was in a good context.
It was. It was good to see you last night. And
thanks.
We were just talking about someone whose name shouldn't be mentioned, but I'll mention it anyway. Mitt Romney, about his binders full of women.
Oh, yes. Yeah, right.
And by the way, how many? There is a large amount of women working in the state government in North Carolina, isn't there?
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We have quite a few women in this administration.
Mm-hmm. And you have held a couple of positions.
Mm-hmm.
And tell the folks out there, what were they?
I just recently resigned from the state personnel director position, which was a cabinet post with the governor.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
And you were in the legislature also, right?
I was in the legislature, and my freshman year, I was chair of the Democratic Freshman Caucus.
Mm-hmm.
So I've held leadership positions just about everywhere I've been. When I was on the Wake County Board of Commissioners, I was chair of the board in my last year on that board. So, yes, I've held quite a few leadership positions.
So, Ms. Coleman, so let me get this straight. We've got a competent woman who holds leadership positions in every stage, all the way up the scale until she's serving under what kind of governor do we have?
Female governor.
A female governor.
Yeah.
And
uh-huh.
running herself for lieutenant governor.
Right.
And we have, on the other hand, something that I can't wrap my head around. We're listening to quotes from this gentleman who says, and I quote, "If we must have women in the workforce, I'll find some in these binders I got that might be, you know, competent and useful." We were curious. How do you have this almost clash of cultures of modernism and traditionalism, but this, you know, Victorian throwback?
It is quite a throwback, I will tell you, because women have been working and been a part of the workforce for such a long time, but there still are some inequities in the workplace with regard to women. For instance, in women pay, we have come a long way, but we still have quite a ways to go when it comes to having full equality as it concerns women in the workplace. We've done a lot with policies to make sure that there are family supportive policies, policies that support women in the workplace, and to make it easier, because we know that these policies not only help women, but they help men as well, because men and women are looked at as partners.
As if Lord knows, men need help, don't they?
Yes, yes, yes. Well, and they both need help. And so it's meant to help both men and women who want to be able to raise a family, but both partners want to contribute equally to the family. And so there's a sharing of not only the finances, but of the responsibilities as well. And so it's important to recognize women as an integral part of the workforce, because women are climbing the corporate ladder. They're climbing the ladder to the executive level in whether it's the nonprofit sector, whether it's the government sector, or whether it is the private sector. And so you have women who are very much a part of the workforce, and who are equally contributing to their family, and therefore it's important to make sure that women are treated equally in all respects.
Well, you know, when you become the lieutenant governor, will you be the first female lieutenant governor?
No. Beth Perdue, our current governor, was the first female governor. I would be the second, but I would be the first African American, and not only that, but I would be the first African American independently elected lieutenant governor in the country.
Oh, wow.
Is that right?
Congratulations.
Yes, yes. Simply because, you know, North Carolina is one of those states where the governor and the lieutenant governor run on different ticket. They do not run on the same ticket.
Right.
I think there are about 17 states where we do not run on the same ticket, like the president and vice president.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't wait to make history.
So, what is your main platform, and why you should be the lieutenant governor of North Carolina?
My main platform is I am running to protect the middle class, to protect and grow the middle class. And we do that through smart investments in high-tech research, investment in job training, and investment, most of all, in education, because we know that education is what attracts business to the state. It is what helps the private sector to create jobs. It's what has made North Carolina both a leader and an innovator, and it is also what has absolutely given opportunity to the middle class. And so that's why I'm running, to make sure that we still have those opportunities available to all people.
Well, you know, the thing is, North Carolina was always ranked as a major education state, but since Progressive Party has taken over the legislature. I mean, how has that fallen? Where are we now?
We are regressing, because this current legislature has really tried to gut education and everything else that has helped to make North Carolina great. You know, our university system is really the envy of the nation. We have one of the greatest university systems in the entire country. And when you cut $1 billion from education, from pre-K through the university system, you do irreparable harm to the state.
Absolutely.
You do irreparable harm to the economy, to access, because those universities now, that's why we're having rising tuition rates, because when they cut the universities, they've got to find the money elsewhere. And so it may be seen in rising tuition rates. If tuition rates rise, you're going to cut off access to those people who may not be able to get Pell Grants or may not be able to get enough Pell Grants to cover the cost of an education. So you cut off access to the middle class. And that's what I want to be able to stand up against, those kinds of cuts. What's being done to our education system, what's being done to the progress of North Carolina.
Well, where did they put that $1 billion that they cut? Did he just put it in their pocket? I mean, when are they going to cut it? Okay, something's more important then. Where did they put it? Don't tell me they put it in tax.
Well, they want to they cut the budget. They cut the budget for one thing. We used to have a little bit over a close to a $22 billion budget. Now we have a $20 billion budget. So they want to cut the budget. They want to show that, you know, they can run a lean, mean, streamlined government. And so they cut a lot of services. It wasn't just education that they cut. They cut a lot of other services, too. But I just think education is just one of those that I wanted to highlight.
Well, this is one of the problems that I've always had with the Republicans. I don't understand the mentality. I understand, you know, cutting taxes and making government leaner and more efficient. That's all. Everybody wants that. But I've never understood the incessant attack on education that they've waged now for decades, because education is the rock bottom foundation of any nation. If you do not have an educated population, you don't have a future. You don't have another generation of workers or politicians or bankers or corporate people or anything.
See, you get it. You get it. You get it. That's exactly right.
Well, then you also can't tell when a politician is lying to you either.
Well,
and that's why, you know, truth matters. Truth does matter.
Now, as the lieutenant governor, isn't that your bailiwick? You would be in charge of how education would be spent or run?
Somewhat, because the lieutenant governor does sit on two major policy-making education boards, both the State Board of Education and the State Board of Community Colleges. And, of course, we know that we have a tremendous community college system in North Carolina, and it's one that does job training. And that's why we need to also invest in job training, because we've got over 3.5 million jobs in this country that are unfilled today because we don't have the skills to fill them. And that's where our community colleges and our universities could come in to make sure that we have the curriculum, that we know what those jobs are, that we provide the skill sets in our curriculum in our community colleges and our universities, and recruit those businesses to North Carolina and connect them to the jobs.
Right. Well, then you'll be working directly hand-in-hand with June Atkinson then, right? Correct?
Yes, okay. I would.
Yeah, so then how to get these kids to the community college and to the university level, we need to also make sure that they have the foundation in pre-K and K through 12, but money's being cut out of there also.
Absolutely. And that's why I say funding is fundamental to all levels of education, because it's pre-K where the kids, these preschoolers, will get their foundation to ensure a successful academic career throughout their life. And if they get that foundation, then they're pretty much going to be successful in the K-12. K-12 is that pipeline to our university system, and right. If we do what we need to do in K-12, then hopefully we're not going to have the remediation that's required in some of our colleges and universities and community colleges. We can put that money back in the K-12. I will tell you, investments, and we should not look at it as just purely funding. We need to look at education funding as an investment, because I will tell you, back in 2008, we put money into the dropout prevention program. Well, those students were in the ninth grade back in 2008, and they graduated in 2012. And I can tell you, this year, North Carolina has the highest graduation rate that it's had ever in the history of the state. But that's what investments do. They pay off.
Right. And that was a graduation rate for the 12th grade. Is that correct?
This was this year's graduating class in the 12th grade. Highest graduation rate ever in the history of North Carolina. That's because we invested back in those kids when they were in the ninth grade in 2008.
Well, that is despite what the Republican, I should say, wrong word, regressive party did with cutting funding. Now, aren't they now going to say, well, you see, we cut the funding out and we're now the highest in the country?
Right.
They use that for an excuse.
Yes. They do use it for an excuse, but, you know, there are no good excuses when
yes.
it comes to cutting education. You just cannot come up with a good excuse. Because, again, as the gentleman just said to the audience, you cut off a whole generation
right.
when you cut off education right now. You know, that's why we do what we do. We want to ensure the success of the next generation. That's why people struggle and sacrifice to send their kids to college, to make sure they've got a good education, so that they can have a better life.
Right.
And when you cut off education, you cut off that access.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know the education is probably your number one priority, but what are some? Give us another priority that you have. I know you haven't got much time, but I want to get a couple of things in here. Well, what's your other one of your other big things that you want to see?
I am absolutely, you know, the economy, because to me you cannot talk about the economy without talking about jobs. But I definitely want to see the economy grow. And I think that there's some wonderful opportunities in North Carolina through collaborative efforts to really look at our regions, because North Carolina is such a diverse state. It's diverse in the topography. The West is different from the Triad, which is different from the Piedmont, which is different from the Research Triangle Park, which is different from the coast and the coastal plains. And so all of these regions have something very unique about them, but they also have opportunities, great opportunities for economic growth and development. And I look at the Charlotte-Mecklenburg area, and that's a prime example. You all have always been known as the banking industry because you've got so many banks who have headquarters in your area. But now with the merger of Duke Power and Progress Energy, that is the largest public utility in the entire country now. And so what that means is that there are going to be untold opportunities for economic development in that area around the energy industry. And lots of small energy companies are going to want to locate there because they want to be around there. There are going to be lots of startups, entrepreneurs, there are opportunities for research and development. It's going to make for the research and development that will look for sources of renewable energy. It's just going to be tremendous. When I look at the healthcare industry, I look at what has happened in the East with East Carolina University, and they're getting the med school as well as the dental school and now a VA hospital, so that they don't have to come to Raleigh. But all of those eastern counties now will have somewhere to go without having to drive 3 and 4 hours for medical attention, especially our veterans. But more importantly, there are people who are going to have jobs. That is an economic hub in eastern North Carolina where there was no economic hub before. Pharmaceuticals and other support industries, healthcare industries, have located there. And that's what I call industry-based recruitment rather than recruitment of job by job and company by company. But we're talking about support industries around a major industry such as healthcare, energy, biotech. We're number 5. Why can't we be number 1? What does it take to be number 1? Let's start to do whatever it takes to be number 1 in biotech. The green energy. There are so many emerging energy industries now, and we
right.
just need to look at what are the skill sets needed for those and to start grooming our people and making sure that North Carolina is right at the top when it comes to making sure that we are providing the training and that we are providing the collaboratives, whether it's with government industry, business, education, financial institutions, all of these need to be involved in coming up with ideas to say, yes, we'll work together to bring this here to make it happen.
You know, something was just going through my mind here. How does the governor and the lieutenant governor work, since they are not, they don't have to be from the same party? How does that
right.
that scenario work?
Well, you know, other than serving on those major educational boards, the lieutenant governor really gets to set his or her own agenda. And hopefully, there are always some, you don't want to do something that pulls in such a way that it doesn't accomplish anything. So you absolutely want to find out what common ground is with other people. And you also need to know that you need to work across party lines. You don't need to be afraid to cross the line. Sometimes some person may have to move to the right. Somebody may have to move to the left. But, you know, sometimes you just have to move, because the people of this state do not send their elected officials anywhere to preside over gridlock. And that happens, it's the people who lose. And if we say that we want to serve the people, then we're not going to have gridlock. We're going to find some common ground, work on that so that it benefits all people of this state.
Well, has that ever happened in North Carolina where we've had?
Oh yes, a couple of times. Yeah, it's happened. I believe when Bob Jordan was lieutenant governor under Jim Martin, it happened when Jim Gardner was lieutenant governor under Jim Hunt. So yeah.
I'm not from these parts. Are there any times where the governor and the lieutenant governor work together on projects, or is that not something that comes?
Well, I am not sure what projects they may have worked on at the time. I really cannot say. I would have to go back and look to see if there were some shared interests during that time. I cannot speak to that right off the top of my head.
Right. Okay. Well, I just want to tell us how you can get some people to come out to help you. Where can they call up the volunteer? Give us a website where they can send some money. Tell us.
Absolutely, because, you know, I say I need three things. I need prayer, money, and votes. Those are the only three things I need. And my website is www.lindacoleman.org. So I'll just go to lindacoleman.org. And if they want to volunteer, they can simply call 919-834-2557.
Say that again, 919.
834-2557.
Okay, very good.
And if you go to lindacoleman.org, you can contribute online.
You can contribute online. And they will be glad to take your money. Ladies and gentlemen out there, we need this young lady as our next lieutenant governor in the state of North Carolina.
And you can help make history doing it.
And you help make history.
That's right.
And it's only another, how many days, 2 weeks? We have
another 11 days.
Yeah, give or take a nor'easter.
Give or take. Okay. Well, I want to thank you, Linda Coleman, and for doing everything you've done so far, and we're looking forward for you to do a lot more.
Thank you so much for having me on, and I always enjoy your show. So you keep doing the good work that you're doing.
I'm trying. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay.
I thank you.
Okay.
And also.
Okay. Take care, both of you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Linda Coleman.
Fantastic.
Who shall be the next lieutenant governor in North Carolina. And we are having a lot of spike. I'm going to see if I can pull up another line here because we have a lot of interference on that line. I don't know. I don't know if you guys who are listening can hear it, but.
Well, you know, they told us this week there were sunspots. Maybe it's solar radiation.
You think it's a sunspot, huh?
Well,
I'm going to try to pull up another line here and see if we can get another line. And
well, you know, one of the things that I like best about what Ms. Coleman explained was the she really brought out and emphasized the importance of lieutenant governorship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people just think it's a almost ceremonial role.
Right,
you,
right.
You just stand
it's
around waiting
a ceremonial
in case
role.
You have to do something when the governor's out of town, you know. But this is an active position, independently elected, and with great influence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at her sitting on two different educational boards, things like that. She can influence policy. She'll be in the mix every week. You know, this is important stuff. So it's not office to throw away and ignore. But
and,
I hope people remember that and get out and vote.
And while we are doing that, I was trying to get another another line up here, but doesn't look like I can get another line. I don't know
you
what's going on here.
$5 billion cuts.
Yeah, well, that's
whatever.
The story. But anyway, where we were talking about the Midster.
The Midster. Oh, you mean the son of Detroit?
The speak about the son of Detroit. Did everybody hear that? Did everybody? Come on. Did you hear he said, I am so sick and tired of this man coming on with that malarkey that he is the son of Detroit. I don't want to hear that no more.
Hey,
please.
I grew up driving around in a car with my parents. Does that make me a...
That makes you the son of a Plymouth.
Yeah.
It don't make you the son of Detroit.
Hey, man, that was a Barracuda.
A Plymouth Barracuda.
Yeah.
I mean, can you believe it? Does this, I know I'm looking for this here, and I know it is the most idiotic, stupid thing I have ever heard anybody say before. And
would this be his op-ed, his let Detroit go bankrupt thing?
Yes.
Or is this more of his statements recently?
No.
I've got one quote right here from him if you want to
hear
it.
Well, sure.
One of these things is that if General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler get the bailout that their chief executives are asking for, you can kiss the American automotive industry goodbye. It won't go overnight, but its demise is guaranteed.
Well, just speaking about that, let's hear this.
And I know he keeps saying, you wanted to take Detroit bankrupt. Well, the president took Detroit bankrupt. You took General Motors bankrupt. You took Chrysler bankrupt. That was precisely what I recommended and ultimately what happened.
So now he is the master planner.
This guy is so unbelievable.
So we moved from bankrupt to, hey, you followed my plan exactly.
I can't even believe, you know.
are you saying that the let's drown government in a bathtub people are now proclaiming that thank God the government bailed out the automotive industry just like I planned?
Oh, I'm telling you. I mean to tell you. It is so, listen to this. Here's another thing. Listen to this.
I'm a son of Detroit. I was born in Detroit. My dad was head of a car company. I like American cars. And I would do nothing to hurt the U.S. auto industry. My plan to get the industry on its feet when it was in real trouble was not to start writing checks. It was President Bush that wrote the first checks. I disagree with that. I said these companies need to go through a managed bankruptcy. And in that process, they can get government help and government guarantees, but they need to go through bankruptcy to get rid of excess cost and the debt burden that they'd built up. And fortunately,
Governor Romney,
the president
that's not
took
what you said.
Fortunately, you can take a look
Governor
at the
Romney,
op-ed.
You did not say
you know,
that
I'm,
you
I'm
would provide
speaking.
Governor help.
I said that we would provide guarantees, and that was what was able to allow these companies to go through bankruptcy, to come out of bankruptcy. Under no circumstances would I do anything other than to help this industry get on its feet. And the idea that has been suggested that I would liquidate the industry, of course not. Of course not.
Let's check
that's
the record.
That's the height of silliness.
I would
liquidate the industry.
Governor,
I want to
the
keep the industry
Detroit,
going
don't
and
forget.
Thriving.
Now, you might have heard a little bit of noise, something like a little ghost. That was me. I could not believe it. I said, if you were watching it, this man was Nixon redo. He was sweating so much. And if they showed it on the screen, the president was sitting there like a crouching tiger who wanted to rip his head off. And he was, gets on MSNBC, lean forward. He was leaning forward in his chest. He wanted to rip. Listen, this is what can't say words. This is what Mitt Romney said. He said he didn't say it, right? He said if General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler get the bailout that their chief executives asked for, you can kiss the American auto industry goodbye. It won't happen overnight, but its demise will be virtually guaranteed. Now, this man will sit there now and talk to who he thinks are the low information voters from Fox and lie and says, I do not believe it. That's why, people, you need to go see this movie, Guy for the Married Man. If you are ever caught in a lie, just lie, deny. Who do you believe, me or your lying eyes? This man lies so much. And Barack Obama told him, I've made a different bet on American workers. If we were taking your advice, Governor Romney, we'd be buying cars from China instead of selling cars to China. Now,
this is a guy who literally, now this is what I don't understand the Republicans. They're all waving flags.
Yeah, did you see the size of that American flag in his lapel?
Yeah.
It is twice the size of the president. And this man and his coward sons and his coward father and grandfather never served, never picked up a gun to defend this country when they had an opportunity. President Obama didn't have the opportunity. He was in between the wars. But this man was ready. And so was his father and his grandfather and his five Chicken Hawk sons who never picked up a gun to defend any military installation or the American flag.
Well,
because they're cowards. Period.
His grandparents were busy defending.
They were busy
the
having 16, 17 wives, right.
Down in Mexico. But anyway, listen. This is a guy who, this is what I don't understand about Republicans. They say they're pro-American, and they say they're pro-industry. And yet, literally, they were just like, write off the whole industry. Let them go bankrupt. Who cares?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. This is, you know.
Because when you want to get rid of the industry.
Who invented
unions?
The automotive industry.
They're unions. They don't want
that's
unions.
Want. Exactly.
Get
the
rid
same
of the
reason,
unions.
That's the same reason they want to
absolutely.
Get rid of school. I mean, it's like, you know, you remember Mitt's famous for saying, I love teachers. But
yeah.
They want to get rid of schools. They want to get rid of the unions. Okay? And they want to get rid of this. This is it's so short-sighted. Could you imagine how bad it would be if we lost the automotive industry in America? Talk about economic doom and no recovery.
You're talking about half a million workers.
Right.
At least.
But you're also talking about everything even remotely affiliated with it. Not to mention the prestige. Could you imagine being a superpower that can't even produce a car? I mean, come on.
I mean, how are we supposed to go to the moon if we can't drive down the street
exactly
in our own
right.
car?
Exactly right.
And here's the thing where he's lying so much. Oh, they could have got loans. There wasn't anybody giving loans. No private industry was going to give loans to a company that might go bankrupt just to save them. They give loans when they know they're going to get paid back.
Right. And that's what the government did. It.
That,
and
the problem
guarantee.
Was, right. The thing was that the private companies, what he says, they could have went out, the Chrysler and Ford could have went out and got loans. They would have not gotten loans. And the only way these private banks would have given loans is if they would have had the government guarantee up front,
right,
which they were never going to get under a Romney administration. And the president pushed it. President Obama pushed it and saved these car people. And any of these car people in Ohio or Detroit or any place else, any affiliates, Auto Bell, even.
Oh, any of
them. Any of them.
I mean, look, everything.
If they don't vote for
everywhere.
Obama, well, you know what? When this fool gets in, they deserve everything that's going to be coming up. Because I'm telling you, if you think that this man is going to help the U.S. government and the U.S. industry, any U.S. industry, when he can sell it to a foreign entity and make more money, I have another joke for you. It ain't going to happen.
Hey, look, isn't that what Bain Capital was all about? Isn't that where he made his million?
Listen,
look, he was a fire salesman that went in there, liquidated things, and took that capital out.
Absolutely.
And then walked away from the ruins.
Absolutely.
And that's what he was saying here. He was saying, hey, they're on the ropes. Let them go down. And we'll just take their, you know, whatever we can take out of the bank before they collapse.
Absolutely.
And we'll laugh. And you know what?
Absolutely.
Maybe my friend the Koch brothers will come in and buy it at wholesale and then turn it into Koch manufacturing car company.
Well, this is what they do. The whole thing, he wanted the car companies to crash down to the bottom, rock bottom, and then the speculators like Bain Capital will come in, all your pension plans would be gone. They would buy up these companies for next to nothing. There would be no pension plan. There would be no workers. They would sell it off to China or bring back the company with no union making, instead of the average right now, I think it's $33 an hour, they would probably be making maybe $15 an hour.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
If they're lucky. Minimum wage,
that's even
in the right direction
to bring them back. After all, I mean, they could just sell them and walk away.
I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Look, and this is the thing that gets me over and over again: people don't pay attention. This is a guy who not just mentioned it. This is a guy who wrote the New York Times, you know, op-ed saying, "Do it right."
Oh.
This is his economic policy in action.
This
right?
was
now,
his
this is the
policy
party. If you remember, a few years ago, when the economy was starting to tank and things were, you know, starting to look iffy. What the Bush administration got in trouble for trying to sell every port in America.
Right.
You remember that?
Right.
Just to make some profit.
Right, right.
Hey, let's start selling off
yeah.
all the
well,
ports.
Well, listen, yeah, they sold off three-quarters of them. We don't even own anymore. We don't own the ports.
That's their vision.
That's their vision.
That's
right. People don't understand that.
Having a double-sized lapel pin that you got made in China?
See if you can find it. I think it was under George W. Bush. But Rumsfeld, because it got into a national security issue. And Rumsfeld
yeah.
gave the okay for it to be done.
Right.
They were going to – right now – a lot. I don't know if it's most. It might be most of the ports where ships come in and unload.
Yep.
We don't own anymore, people. It was sold off by the Bush administration. You need to check this out. There's a lot of things we don't own anymore.
And the good thing was that this divided his own party. They said it peeled off half the Republican Party against Bush because even they couldn't stand with this because they were selling them to Dubai and everywhere else. And anybody that had a you know, any
a dime
with a dollar out there.
Absolutely.
So, but let me get back to Detroit for 1 second. One of the things that people forget. So here we got the Romney plan, right? You just burn it down, and then you strip out anything left, sell for profit. You know, there might be some tubing. There might be something left that you can, you know, sell off some burnt furniture or something. Get that profit, walk away from it, and laugh, right? Or you have a guy who says, you know what? In a time of disaster, in a time of economic collapse, the government has a responsibility to step in, save a valuable industry, and then step back out. And they did that. And what happened to Detroit? It went back to number one. Number one, not number 57th or not 112th in the nation. You know what? It didn't falter along. You know, just this side of the Republic of Congo for car manufacturing. It went back to number one. Are people stupid? Do they not get it? It's unbelievable. So why would they support something that's that un-American? That's what I can't understand. This is a backbone industry. I mean, you know, this 1950s la-la land they live in? Well, you can't have that without the scene of the smiling family in that car. You know what I mean?
Well, let me play this one more time. This is what Romney said.
And I know he keeps saying, you wanted to take Detroit bankrupt. Well, the president took Detroit bankrupt. You took General Motors bankrupt. You took Chrysler bankrupt. That was precisely what I recommended and ultimately what happened.
So he's even claiming credit for it, though, now.
Now he wants to claim credit for what the president did.
Even though he, at the same time, is attacking him for it. I mean, for the whole last year.
Well, that's how you do it. You take credit for it, and then you attack it. So he was before it. He was for it before he was against it. No, he was against it before he was for it.
Well,
I mean, this is, you know, it's just obvious. It is just obvious that this man will lie and say anything that comes to his mind. Well, you know what? But it's not coming to his mind. This man, all he knows is how to make a buck. He is a salesperson. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen out there. I know what it is. I was a salesman. I worked on Wall Street. The bottom line is sell.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. Sell. The problem why I left is because I couldn't lie about it. I couldn't lie about it. You know, I didn't go in there to take people who have saved their entire life and take their money and tell them, yes, don't worry, it's guaranteed.
Yeah, and just laugh about it.
And laugh about it.
See,
it is just unbelievable. This man, the whole idea was with Bain is to go in, wreck a couple. If you the movie Wall Street, greed is good. His whole idea was to go in to companies that wanted to improve, or that were on the cusp of improving but needed financial support, or companies that were on the cusp of possibly going down and thought they could get an influx of money that could save their company. But his whole thing, and there's a great line in the movie Wall Street where Charlie Sheen, who is his accomplice with this, asks Michael Douglas, why do you want to wreck my father's company? He said, because I can.
Yes.
Because I can.
Just because.
Because I can.
See, this is their world. It's just money. You have money. I have money. Why shouldn't I have money? All
that's
money.
Right.
I mean, if you've got money, that's something I don't have. And if I can take it from you, that's fair, right?
It's just
because I can. It's the same way if you're walking down the street and you're not paying attention and some thug comes out of an alley, he can take your stuff because he can. Well, let me read you this, Mike.
Yes, go ahead.
Jasmine, look it up. Now, this is a Dubai port scandal.
Right.
Okay. A Dubai company was the one that was going to buy all of our ports because,
right,
you know, we had pumped enough, Blackwater money in,
right,
that they suddenly were flush with money. Wars are wonderful things for that. But so here we go, the you know, Arab princes that we create in their little fiefdoms over there are now going to repay us handsomely with the profits they've been making off our war.
Repay us or repay X amount of people?
Yeah,
it ain't going to you and me.
This is a little word play.
Oh.
A word play there. They're going to repay us the favor of all the profits we made them from Iraq by buying America. See? And when they say buying American, they didn't
mean,
have what
mean
we had
buying
in mind.
America.
Yeah. So listen. 2006, this deal is going through with P&O, the Peninsular and Oriental Steam Navigation Company. Is P&O is the one that's going to buy all the ports for front operation for Dubai, right? Now, I just want to read this little list real quick, because they said when the news first broke, they only said it might be four or six ports, maybe.
Yeah, right.
Right. Well, they said the Bush administration went ballistic when that news broke.
Of course, it wasn't supposed to break.
And it got so mad that this is what our president did. Our love America, wave a flag, stand in front of my ranch in Texas, president.
Mm.
Okay? When he's not on vacation. This is what he did. He got so mad that he threatened to veto any legislation that Congress passed to block the deal. He threatened that it would bring down the entire world economy if he didn't do this. He said if it would send a terrible signal to my friends and allies not to let this transaction go through.
My friends and allies
that he would sell
is Saudi Arabia.
Now, and you know, that's where his father's a business partner,
mm-hmm.
Saudi Arabia. Now, he got very angry, said that you cannot delay this process. You cannot do anything to stop it, right? Well, then they said they started investigating why he's like having such a reaction. They found out he was selling over 20.
Who was doing the investigation?
The press.
The
so
press.
Then it broke that he was not talking about four ports. We're talking about 22 ports. So that this is the thing.
Did they list them there?
No, they have 22 is the initial report. There's even more than that afterwards.
Oh.
But, okay, went from four to 22. Here are just a few of them they have listed. Now, any of y'all listening, y'all may have heard of some of this stuff. Now, these ports nationwide. But here's just like, for instance, East Coast ports. We've got Portland, Maine, Boston, Massachusetts, New York. You may have heard that one. What's that? New York?
Well, the Port Authority of New York,
Rhode
the federal
Island,
government don't own them.
Davisville, Newark, being sold. Philadelphia, being sold. Camden, New Jersey. Wilmington, Delaware. Baltimore, Maryland, being sold. Several Virginia locations, including Newport News, Portsmouth. We've also got Houston, Galveston, Port Arthur, Beaumont, Freeport, Corpus Christi. Any Texans out there? Anybody heard of those? How about let's sell Lake Charles? Oh, and New Orleans. What the heck?
Oh,
hey,
might as well.
It's underwater anyway.
That's right.
Why not, right? And then it just goes on and on. I mean, I've got a list here. Miami. Anybody heard of that one? You know, it goes all the way around the country in a ring. They were selling, you know, basically every port. Okay. Where's that American flag lapel
so
fit into
now,
this picture?
None of this went through.
Well, it got blocked at because of embarrassment, basically. But when the Republicans defected in Congress, and they knew they were in serious trouble. Because, you know, here we are in the war on terror. Here we are waterboarding.
Well, that's right.
And yet we're selling to the guys we're, you know, war at.
We're selling it to the guys who actually crashed the planes into the World Trade Center.
Well, not just
their Saudi Arabia
uncles and, you know, we're not selling it to the corpses, just the people who are still there, you know. But, look, this is what I don't understand. Cannot people remember 5 minutes ago? This is what they're doing in the height of the terror war. In the height of the depression that followed the terror war, you know, when we didn't get to sell off every port in America to keep the economy afloat, we ended up with Detroit going broke. And Obama steps in when this guy says, screw him, let him go bankrupt. Too bad. Luck of the draw, dude. So how is this patriotic? How is this American policy? How is this pro-American? You know, this is a guy who's running ad campaigns going, day one, I'm going to come in and kick the door down to China. It's a trade war, you know. How is this American? Look at their policies and actions. Don't look at their ad. Don't listen to the campaign. Day one, Romney's going to stand up to China. Now, this is junk. His words, his policy, let them go bankrupt. Bush's words and policy, sell our ports for a profit. What the heck are we talking about?
It's all about profit.
They will sell your home and your grandmother and anybody else out for money. That's what they do. That's all Bain Capital did.
They went in
and sold off companies.
Now, there's nothing wrong with these Bain Capitals doing all this because that's the capitalistic society. But the problem is you should not be allowed, I don't care what kind of capitalistic society you live in, you should not be allowed to sell off assets that can indirectly or directly affect national security.
Well, that was one of the big things that peeled off the other Republicans, because the intelligence community came in and Homeland Security and said this deal would jeopardize America. It would make it
worse. Absolutely. It was selling off the ports. We already control the ports.
The ports that Dubai already controlled, they said they had a huge problem with oversight because they could not access.
They couldn't access, right.
They couldn't keep up with the containers, and they couldn't see any files or any regulations. So they said they can bring in and out anything they want because we already can't see the ports they own. Now you're going to sell all of them to them.
Yeah,
that would effectively open our entire sea front everywhere.
Absolutely right.
Again, though, you've got accepting this fact that, like, at the last second, it was narrowly averted after public outcry and Homeland Security and CIA all going, are you nuts? The problem is their policies and actions. You're saying it's okay to have a company like Bain in a capitalist society. Sure. Okay. You got all kind of companies competing with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all struggling. You know, right down the street from us, when we had that Barnes & Noble's opened up next to a Borders and put them out of business by undercutting their prices. Hey, mm-hmm. That's capitalism. Mm-hmm. Welcome to it. Okay. There's a problem, though, when you take greed is good, capitalism, as a corporate policy and put it in as a national policy.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the entire goal, if that's it for America, is to can we turn a profit this quarter, you know, and sell everything out of it? What the hell? We got some missiles lying around out in the prairie. I bet somebody would pay handsomely for those, right? Maybe Iran.
You think?
Hey, Iran needs missiles, I hear. They're actively seeking nukes. We've got a whole arsenal. How much money could we make? I bet we could get trillions.
Hey.
You know.
Why not?
If it's greed-driven, hey, right? If that's all that matters is turning a profit, let's just go to it, buddies. But see, that's the fallacy. It can't be that way. And national policy has to exist differently than corporate policy.
Right.
Which is what worries me so much, because you remember during the campaign, during the entire last year, he's repeatedly, you know, reasserted, just like Bush Jr. did, that he was the NBA president. You know, he was the business executive that was going to come in after that lax Clinton.
Okay. Right.
Well, this is a guy who constantly says, I'm going to be the corporate president. I'm going to restore America and the corporate vision. And so much so, my cabinet will be a corporate board. You remember that?
Well, yes. This is the thing. All these ultra conservatives and regressives believe that all government can be run like a business. You cannot run a country with over 300 million people like a business.
Well, that's why they are also distinct things. So this is another thing. You know, I love grammar, and you know I love to write and read, and I love things like vocabulary and definitions. People confuse things, you know, but that's why they call one a government and one a business. They're two different things.
Well, not when you conflate it.
Well, that's the problem with these people. They think simplistically that you can just have everything be the same and it's all okay.
Yeah, but if that's the case, then why do they always say, oh, you can't have education the same.
Right.
But you could have the entire country run the same way.
Yeah.
Like a corporate business.
Right. You know.
But yet you can't teach everybody the same way in the country, because that won't work out.
Right.
But we can have the entire United States government run under a business plan.
Yeah, like it's an oil company or something.
Right.
Oil companies made money last month, so let's put that model in place.
Absolutely. Bain made money last month, so let's run the company like we run Bain.
Right.
But the profit is – oh, and it was something else I wanted to tell you about that was that it was I forgot which company it is, which country it is. They have a – about health care.
Mm-hmm.
It
that
be
doesn't help me any, Mike, because every country has health care except for
well, that's true.
But we are the last
Sweden,
modern nation without health care. So
Sweden has a – Sweden is ranked in the upper 5%
of the world. Oh, all
of the
Scandinavian countries are. They're actually usually
with
in the top 5.
Doctors being able to see a doctor.
Mm-hmm. For the affordability,
and
for the amount of coverage?
No, it was something I just saw last night. It had something to do with the cost. Well, we know the cost is limited by the government. Oh, they're strictly non-for-profit.
Right.
Because
right,
you should not make money on someone's illness.
Exactly. See, what they do over there is, well, you know, what we used to do here. Same way with their educational system. European countries, if you are a citizen, guaranteed the right to education all the way through, free. Okay?
Because
now,
it only helps.
Like in England, if you choose in college to, you know, be a dummkopf and go to the pub and drink all day and leave school and fail, fine. Then that's it. And you lost your chance. And then if you decide to go back later and get a degree, it's on you. You pay for it. Because you know what? They gave you one chance.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody gets a chance. See? They're because they're investing in their society. So they give everyone a free education if you want it, but you have to actually pass, you know. You actually have to graduate. Now, if you want to drop out and be the peon at the local eatery, fine. Good job. Go ahead. But they will give you the chance. In the same way with the medical over there, they give you, as a citizen, the right to good health. If anything would interfere with that, like, say, a company trying to make profit off of that, they think that's wrong. So what they do is pay all physicians and all that, like, salaries. They're like government workers because they're investing in their country. And that way, cost never comes into the equation. There's no,
well,
there's
but
no
that,
banker
but,
and money and finance.
But what that means is that I can't have 15 yachts.
Well, that might be true. But
oh, well, that's not fair.
It is
fair. I want to go see two patients, then go on the golf course and go on my yacht every day.
Yeah, but you know what? Just like with everything else, some things are for the public good. Just because you choose to do something?
Well, that's not. I'm for me good. I'm not for the public good. I'm for me good.
You know, then again, maybe you can just go out and, you know, the neighbor that annoys you, shoot them. You know, the person that cuts you off in traffic.
No, but see, in Europe.
Right?
You can only have a gun if you go and ski shooting a duck or pheasant hunting on your own property.
Or in Texas.
I'm talking Europe now. I mean, yeah.
Well, luckily, I caught that one with my face.
That's right. Now, the thing is that. Getting back to the Mr. Since this is the Mr.
The Mr.
Day,
Hour.
The Mr. Hour. This is some of his foreign policy positions.
Okay.
Early in 2011, Romney accused President Obama of having mission creep and mission muddle in Libya. You know, that's when they started. Oh well, you know, we got to get rid of the Gaddafi and we need to arm those rebels.
Amen.
We need to okay, fine. Well, who's the rebel? Well, matter. Let's go down the street and ask somebody. You a rebel? Let's give them some guns. Let's arm the rebels. Never mind. They might take that gun from you. Say thank you, and then shoot you with it. Forget that. We need to arm them because Gaddafi is the guy we got to get rid of. He was our main man. I mean, Bush made an agreement with him.
Yep.
Ronald Reagan shot down two aircraft. And, hey, he was quiet. Didn't hear no more from him.
Well, look, this is the, you know, another example of the pot calling the kettle black water. The masters of mission creep, you know, the ones that in revenge for 2011 raced right into Saddam's palace and turned on a gold faucet. Somehow that was connected. It's that same thing of what we're guilty of, we're going to accuse you of. So they're going to start calling him mission creep and mission muddle. You know, these are the masters of that. And
well, yeah. Now he also said Romney. He cited Obama for leading from behind in Libya. He said one wonders if Romney would criticize Nelson Mandela, who once said, it's better to leave from behind to put others in front, especially when you celebrate victory when nice things occur.
You know what? This is one of the most idiotic things I've ever heard, because anybody who's ever been in the Army or a student of history, perhaps, might have heard of people like Winston Churchill, Julius Caesar, you know, a lot of other people have actually said these exact things, because a humble leader always lets the people think, even if they're not, but think that it's their decision and that he's following them. Because otherwise, you're the dictator.
Oh, and Lord knows we can't have any more dictators. Well, speaking about a humble leader, we have someone on the phone right now. Hello, who's calling?
This is Judge Charlotte Brown Williams, Mr. Lawson. How are you?
Yeah, who would you say this again?
Judge
Charlotte Brown Williams.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
I don't know if you heard us talking up earlier, but we were praising you.
Yeah, we were talking just a little while ago. We just had Linda.
Go ahead.
Coleman on.
I'm sorry?
We just had Linda Coleman on.
Oh, a wonderful candidate for lieutenant governor. I met her last night. I mean, I saw her. I hadn't seen her in quite a while. She's such a wonderful person.
No, she's there.
I'm here.
Oh, yeah, you're there. Go ahead.
Had a lot of garble on the signal.
Yeah, the garble on the signal then. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. I said I saw her last night. She's such a person.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Hey, look, we've been sitting here celebrating strong, intelligent, vibrant women who are changing our country for the better. And guess what? We didn't find you in a binder. We didn't find you in the kitchen. So we're just celebrating you. And I'm for you. You've been on here before saying it, but tell us again about what you do and what you want to do to help our.
Okay. I currently, as I said before, serve on the district court bench in Mecklenburg County. I was elected in 2008 with the wonderful support of the citizens of Mecklenburg County. And since then, I've been in every single courtroom, civil, criminal, domestic, child support, juvenile. And for the last year and a half, I've been a family court judge.
Is that District Court 26?
26, Judicial District 26, yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. And I do cases such as divorces, separations, alimony, a lot of child custody, and equitable distribution, all of the problems that people would have when they're, you know, unfortunately breaking up.
Right. It's a major problem. But, how many cases would you see in a week's time?
Well, I have a 3-week term, and there's about 40 cases. Now, it sounds like in 3 weeks, 15 days, 40 cases, but one case can be 2 to 3 days. And then in addition to those cases, usually have attorneys, I do 2 days of my term of what we call pro se cases. Those are people who do not have attorneys, self-represented litigants. And
right.
I also do a program called Family Law Facilitator. That's through the Youth and Family Services, and they don't have attorneys either. They are grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins and godparents seeking custody of children.
See, I love
so you. I would say I can, in those days, 20, I see probably about 60 or 70 cases during my term. I know I resolve a lot at the end of the year. My numbers are very high. I probably do over 5,300 cases.
Oh, 5,300 cases.
Wow.
And that's in a year?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Talk about getting a job done. Way to go, Judge.
Now, the thing is, now, you're talking about 5,300 cases, and there are all sorts of cases back and forth, but how many times does it come in front of you where someone really doesn't understand what the heck is going on in the courtroom?
Well, that would be the ones who don't have attorneys. And the sad thing, well, it's sad that as a judge, I cannot make someone's case. So I can't be the lawyer and the judge. So if they don't put on evidence, you see how difficult that is?
Yeah.
Now, of course, I occasionally ask the questions that I need to ask so that I can get what I need to get.
Right.
But it's hard. And Mecklenburg County, we're getting more and more people who are coming into court without attorneys. As you know, attorneys are costly. And so we want access, what we call access to justice. And so we have in Mecklenburg County a self-serve center, family court self-serve center, where people can go and get at least some kind of help in the domestic cases.
So they actually can get some help in how to serve them. Serve them themselves best when it
exactly how to bring the claim, how to do service, and if it's a child custody or divorce, there is a workshop. So if you go to the workshop 1 hour, you know, lunchtime workshop, if you do that, then you're entitled to speak to an attorney. They have an attorney for the day program. Attorneys from the Mecklenburg County Bar will volunteer. And they work in the family court self-service center, and they will see people and at least give them some direction.
Well, you know, the thing that I want to know is that, this is just because it's everybody is not a rocket scientist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody is not Perry Mason. Every lawyer is not Perry Mason. Now, I mean, what do you say to yourself sometimes when you get some of these lawyers that come in here and you say, did this person go to pre-K or what?
Yeah. I believe as a judge, I have a responsibility to educate.
Yeah.
And so I never embarrass a lawyer.
Right.
But, you know, afterward, we have approached the bench, and we have so many wonderful training opportunities throughout the bar, with the bar. And if it's a brand-new lawyer, I will often team them up with someone. I would suggest that they call a more experienced attorney and ask them to kind of give them some guidance.
Right.
Because we want our lawyers to be competent in court. Because if they're not, they're going to hurt the client.
Because there's a lot of time. I mean, you hear about this all the time. The guy's sentencing, he's getting life in prison, or he's getting 10 years. He says, "I was misrepresented in court." I mean, you know,
a
lot of times.
Well,
but you know,
that's criminal court, and that's a whole nother different matter. You have in Mecklenburg County, a public. But they usually pleas. Very few of those cases go to trial.
Uh-huh.
They will take a plea, and you know, and then they go. Some people who get in prison, they see the other. You know, they have a lot of prison lawyers, and they'll say, "Oh, you didn't have a good lawyer," because that's one of the things that you can raise up for an appeal
right.
in a criminal case: ineffective assistance of counsel.
Right.
I love. The fact that we were just talking with Lieutenant Governor Tubi about this, but I love the fact that you take the opportunity, or you see every opportunity as a chance to educate and to lift everyone up. I love that.
Yes. I think that's what I'm supposed. That's a part of my job. that's part of my job, and I like that, you know. But also, the lawyers educate me. People talk about judges not knowing the law. Mm-hmm. Well, we do have classes. The law changes all the time, and if someone's making a novel or a new argument to me, they need to present the case to me, and they're trying to get me to interpret a case their way. Now, you remember, I have two lawyers sometime in front of me, and each one of them wants me to see the case or interpret it and rule the way they see it.
Right.
So, you know, I'll rule it the way I see it. I might side with for a certain proposition. But you know what's funny, Ms., that when two lawyers walk out of the courtroom, and one, I did not rule the way they wanted me to, it's so unfortunate. Guess who gets blamed?
You.
That idiot judge, she doesn't know, she has no legal ability. That's what they say.
Well, you know,
isn't that amazing?
If a lawyer comes up, he says, you know, I have a unique way to present this. It's never been presented before. Would a lawyer come to you first? He knows you're the one that's going to be the judge. He says, listen, judge, this is how I'm going to present this case. And
They can't do that. Yeah.
They can't do that.
No,
okay.
Can't do that. That's ex parte communication.
Okay.
They don't do that. If they, now, whether it's two lawyers or one lawyer and when there's two sides to a case, I cannot talk with one side without the other being present.
Okay, all right. I understand that. All right. Now, then whenever we see these shows on TV where the lawyer is going in and talking to the judge, well, judge, this is what I'm going to say, that doesn't really happen.
Well, they try to make it happen, and some judges allow it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm not here in Mecklenburg.
Right.
Now, sometimes it's to facilitate. Now, you can talk to the judge about procedure.
Right, okay.
So you can talk about how I'm going to, you know, it'll take me 2 hours to do this, judge. My person, one of my witnesses is out of state. May I use the telephone? You know, you can talk about that, but not about a case, not about the facts, and not which way I might rule.
Right.
And that's when it's so important. One of the things that I loved talking about you last time about, you know, you were talking about children and family situations at that time. But one of the things that really came across that I love about you is your great compassion. That
Thank you.
And listen, which some people just don't. You know, some people do not have a listening skill. But you would sit and listen, and you could weigh cases. Because you said sometimes, even at first glance, it appears that a family situation is one way. But upon listening to the case and the defendants and all of the, you know, circumstances, you see where there is, you know, room for growth one way or the other, or for sharing one way or the other, or whatever. And that's what it takes.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, when I have lawyers where they present all the evidence, and you're right, in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm taking my notes, and then when the oral arguments, when they do the, you know, because lawyers will, if you have lawyers, even pro se people, I ask them to stand up and tell me what they would like me to do. Mm-hmm. I always ask them to do that. What do you want me to do today? What are you looking for? So that I can hear them articulate or tell me how they would like me to go.
Right.
And that's important, for someone should know what they want to accomplish with their case. Judge, I want custody. Judge, I just want to visit my child. She's not letting me see him. Judge, he's taken the child and he took him out of town and won't tell me. So then I can see where the real issue is, and I can make a decision that will be best for the child but affect the two persons. Now, us sometimes with lawyers, their arguments, when they give it to me, may change my mind a little bit.
Right.
Okay. Well,
that's why you cannot rule before you listen to everything.
Right.
Exactly. You have to be able to weigh all the evidence and actually think about it instead of just reading a piece of paper and prejudging.
Do you? Now, you've judged. You've been in every courtroom.
Yes.
The courtroom that you get the most, you feel like you do the most good in?
Oh, I feel good in all of them, but probably with two people that don't have attorneys. And I treat them so, you know, I understand. I'm an understanding judge. I don't belittle people in court. And so I feel good because I'm resolving conflict in the family's home. I feel good because I bring resolution to some children. I bring permanency to a child's life. When they've been bounced around from this place, snatched. I feel good when I can, when the people leave the courtroom with a plan of action that they can follow.
Do you ever see your plan of action come back on you? So this is the
yes.
plan, and you say, "Oh man, that was a mistake there."
No. Well, in Mecklenburg County, we're fortunate enough to have family court, and it's one judge per family. So they're going to come back to me, and that's a good thing sometimes.
Yes.
And
yes.
once I do, once I set, for example, custody, once I determine custody, in order for there to be a change, there has to be a standard called substantial change of circumstances. So they just can't come in. But because I'm the same judge, I know the facts of the case. I know the case. And sometimes
so
it comes back, you know. Mm-hmm.
So they can't be coming in and like Mitt Romney and say, "Oh, Etch-a-Sketch the whole thing."
I don't think so. Well, they can come and ask me to set aside my previous order. You know, they're asking me to, you know, set it aside for whatever reason. And then I listen and then I rule.
Okay. That's good. Now, the
you know,
I need, before you go off, I need to ask, how are you feeling? Because I know you weren't feeling well. And how are you doing?
Oh, me, Charlotte? Oh, I'm doing great. I was out for a while, but I came back July, August, and I've been working. I've had a double caseload. I've been out here campaigning because, you know, I'm running for re-election.
Right.
And early voting is so excited. I've been working the polls after work. And so I'm busy. I'm busy, Mike. I love what I do, and I'd like to be returned to the bench.
Well,
come November 6th.
The busiest woman I knew, I've ever known, running for any office. I'll tell you, forget it. If it's a diner, if it's McDonald's, if it's the Auto Bell, there's Charlotte Brown Williams.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. I'm basically a people person, and I enjoy people, and so I'm real comfortable just standing on the corner and saying hello to someone.
Well,
it's easy.
Well, that's why you are such a good judge, because, as Thomas says, you listen. And we sometimes, do you ever have people come into a courtroom and everything just works out fine because all they want to do is have someone listen to them?
Yes. I always, in the criminal court, I know that people need that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people say, "You're taking too much time." No, they needed to get it off their chest. You know, sometimes people have separated,
right,
and they have had argument, and they haven't seen each other until the time they face each other in court. I give them that time to say what they need to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we move on.
Move on.
Sometimes people need closure with the relationship, too.
Absolutely. Where is, how can people help you to get back and be a judge in Mecklenburg County again?
If people enjoy meeting people and greeting people, poll workers are always helpful. People can come and work the polls early voting. There's 22 locations. And then election day, there's 102 precincts that we would love to cover. I can give my email, and someone can email me if they want to.
Well, you just
cewatty@aol.com. They can go on my website, www.charlottebrownforjudge, and my email is right there. There's also a volunteer form, but just shoot me an email and I'll give you some direction and some materials. And if you want to help other people besides me, I'll give you their material as well.
Well, give us that information again, one more time.
My email, C, letters C, B, W, A, T as in Tom, T as in Tom, Y, at AOL.com. And then www.CharlotteBrownFordJudge, F-O-R, Judge.
Well, Charlotte Brown Williams, the courts need you sitting up there helping the people that need to be helped.
Thank you so much. Was it Tony and Mike? Is that right?
Thomas.
Almost. Tony's my
Thomas.
Brother.
Thomas and Mike. Mike and Thomas. Thank you. It was wonderful visiting with you this afternoon.
And I will. It was great seeing you last night. And
yes.
I hope to. I'm going to see you around.
Okay.
This is over with.
Well, hopefully not in the court.
No.
You can always come and say hello. By the way, remember, voting is tonight at 7 and voting tomorrow from 10 to 5 and this Sunday from 1 to 4.
Very good. Okay. I want to
thank
Charlotte Brown Williams. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. That was Judge Charlotte Brown Williams. And
she's one of my favorite people, man.
Right. We have another caller here. Let's see who this caller is here. Hello, who's this?
This is Pat Totham.
Pat Totham? How are you, Pat Totham?
Hearing you talk with Judge Charlotte Brown Williams.
Well, you know, I am so glad to get you on the phone. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Pat Totham, who knows everything about anything that is going on in Mecklenburg County, and he should have been running for office a long time ago. Now she is. And tell everybody what office you're running for.
I'm running for a county commission and at-large position. So it's not a district, it's for the whole county.
So that means everybody in Mecklenburg County, no matter where you are, you can vote for Pat.
That's right. It's very exciting. And I've been all over the county in the last few months meeting people. I've really enjoyed getting to talk to people all over the county. So we have a lot of great people in Mecklenburg County.
Well, you know what? I have this is the first time I can say, and I always voted early vote, I have never, ever, ever, ever waited online to vote early. Even in 2008 when Obama ran the first time. But this time I had to wait 45 minutes, and I have people telling me that's a short time waiting on the early vote line.
Isn't that wonderful? That people are coming out and voting. I'm sorry you had to wait, but isn't that wonderful? That is a great problem.
Unbelievable. So when saying that they don't know if there's enough enthusiasm or there's not enough people coming out, you can't prove that by me.
No, it's been like that all over the county, and it's just wonderful. And it's wonderful to see so many young people come out and you know, and exercise their right. I mean, their voice is important. Everyone's voice is important. And I'm just so happy that so many people are voting. So that's just wonderful. I've talked to many first-time voters. You know, some of them have been 40 years old or 30 years old. Or one woman who is 86.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a naturalized citizen, but she's been a citizen for quite a while. But it was the first time she voted. So that was pretty exciting.
What a wonderful story that is. Well, let me ask you something. I read a while back on your website, because I was, you know, browsing around. I could help myself. But there was something that you said that I really, really have been itching to ask, and I'm so glad that you called in. You said that Mecklenburg County, which I'm very proud of this county. I think we've done a fantastic job. But you said Mecklenburg County is the entire engine of our state, and that we drive this engine. But you said something very important. You said now is the time for big ideas, because now is the time for a new optimism about ourselves, our families, our neighbors, right, that we can achieve, and that now is the time to go to work and make this optimism a reality. And just like we're talking about people turning out to the polls, there seems to be more involved, more optimism. And I wanted to let you tell us about that, how you wanted to make that a reality, because that is the most exciting thing to me.
Well, fortunately in my job, I get to see this every day, because I work with people who feel that, who seem to be very beaten down. And I see them with a little bit of help, you know, start having hope and believing in themselves and believing in life and believing in their own life and their family. Because I work with people who have been in prison. And it's I have seen so many people, you know, start new little companies. And I think that, you know, we've had, you know, Americans are tough. We're not quitters. And we've had some hard times. And, you know, I'm 62 years old, so I grew up with parents, you know, who lived through the Depression. And so I grew up learning about, you know, hard times when they were young. And so that's benefited, you know, people in my generation. But I believe that there are a lot of great ideas. If we just believe in ourselves, you know, I hear people talking about, oh, we've got to have companies come. We have to, you know, somebody's got to come and rescue us. But, you know, I believe that people in Mecklenburg County and the people in North Carolina, we can solve our problems if we work together. I think we have, a lot of people just don't know how to do it. They don't know how, I mean, I talk to people every day who say, well, I'd like to help, but I just don't know what to do. We have a lot of retired people who have a lot of business experience, and we have a lot of young people trying to start businesses. We've got to create some kind of a mechanism where people can get together, where, you know, a young, you know, a startup company can get some help from somebody, because I think we all have a lot to offer. I've talked to a lot of senior citizens groups, and I said, you have a lot of wisdom. And, you know, we need your wisdom. There's a lot of young people who need your wisdom, maybe
right,
beyond your own family. And I just think that if we ask people to do things, they will do it. They just have to be engaged. And I have gotten people engaged to do a lot of things over the years. And I just think we've just got to ask people to do it, and they will do it, because we'll tell them we need them.
Right. You've got one group with the experience and one group with the energy, and you just need to get them together, and they help each other.
Right. And I think there's also, I went to a business consortium that Commissioner Vilma Leek had on, and
Vilma,
she had about 70 small business people, and they were there to network with each other and to learn about how to do business with the county and the state. And it was really amazing. And they were all learning. They were all sharing ideas. I got some, you know, I met some people that I can do work with. It was, and I was so happy that she did that. And, you know, those are kind of things that can be done to get people more, you know, involved. And I would also suggest that you on your show to talk about this, because it's really excellent work that she's doing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We've worked with Vilma for years, and she's a fantastic and extremely energetic lady. I love Vilma.
But I think there's a lot of people out there who would be interested in helping if they just, you know, were connected. But, you know, that's one thing. I don't think that, as I see, there's a lot of people who don't know their neighbors on the other side of town. And I like to think of us all as neighbors. But there's people that live in on the west side of town or the north side of town, or and they don't have any, they never know anybody who lives, you know, up in Huntersville or Cornelius or in Valentine. And I think that we need to have people meeting each other, and then we can work together better. But so many people, they only know the people in their own area. They don't go to other parts of town. They don't even know the wonderful things that we have here in Mecklenburg County. I'm amazed. I've lived here for 25 years, and you know, I have seen places that, I mean, I went to some place the other day, and I'm like, how come I didn't know about this wonderful place over in Marshall Park? I went to a Sierra Club meeting, and I was like, look at this beautiful facility. How come I've never been here before? And yep. I think that we need to be proud out loud. We need to be proud out loud about who we are and what we have to offer. And I think that if we can just have some people be more positive and engage people, it's going to make a big difference.
Well, you know, it's about people only know what they know. And that's a problem that used to be, it used to be where people knew their neighbors. They because their kids went to school together, they knew their families. But today, there are so many transient people in today's society because of jobs closing and opening and just needed the everyday needs of taking care of your family. You don't have time to visit and be friendly with everybody else. And that this is, it's due to, I guess, the transient nature of us, but it's also the times. And we need to get back to the reality of our neighbors. We need to know who they are.
And also, I think we need to go beyond just our neighbors, our close neighbors, but to look at, consider that all the people in the county are our neighbors.
Right.
And I think that we need to get people meeting people who are different than themselves.
Yes.
And I think that is going to help a lot. Then we're going to have much better understanding of people if they can talk to each other. I mean, I went to 4 or 5 of those revaluation meetings where I listened for like 17 hours to people complain about, you know, their taxes. And they said, you know, and their taxes, they're just being wasted. And I kept thinking of the people who might be benefiting from that. And I thought, you know, I bet if they came over and worked with me for a day and they saw some of the people that might be benefiting from it and how they are, what they are doing to contribute to society, they may have a different attitude. They would.
Well, you know, but here's the thing, that it seems like the early 1980s, when the Reagan administration came in, things like that changed. It became a me society. It no longer was, you know, the society where you help your neighbors, whether they live next door to you or your neighbor 10 blocks away. It was me first and me only, and the rest of everybody else can go. And that's a problem that we have today. And what you do and what you have just explained to us is something that most people never get involved with because they don't want to meet anybody else that isn't like them.
Right. And
that needs to change. We need to get back to that, away from this me first and everybody else second.
We grew up our age. I mean, we're in the same age group, and you know, we grew up. Like, I listened to my father talk about World War II and my brother, you know, in Vietnam, and you know, they talked about, you know, you don't leave your buddy behind. If your buddy gets shot, you don't leave him behind and say, well, you know, good luck to you. I got to keep going. And
right.
You know, we're supposed to help our neighbors.
That's right.
And, you know, help them to get what, you know, what they need. And so you don't leave your buddy behind. But we're leaving a lot of people behind.
Well,
you're
absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. I was in church 2 weeks ago. Matter of fact, I had my pastor over at the A Lady Constellation. We did a show from his office last week. And one of the things he told me after he did a sermon the week before was that the first thing that your maker is going to say to you is, what did you do for the least of us? Not going to ask you how much money you made.
Yeah.
Not going to ask you how many kids you had. What did you do for East of Us? And
yeah, I mean, you know, it's like that old story. You don't see any U-Hauls at on the, in a funeral line.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You know, you can't bring it with you. But, you know, we just, I mean, the new, I was impressed with the new superintendent of public, of here in Charlotte, of CMS. When I heard him speak the first time, and he talked about, you know, if there's a car accident and, you know, somebody has a sprained elbow and then another person has a broken elbow, the hospital is going to fix both of them. Some may need a little help. Some may, the other one might need bigger help.
Right.
And it's kind of the same principle, but they're going to fix them because that's their, what they're supposed to do. And, you know, we have people in our county that, you know, need a little help, and then we have some that maybe need more help because maybe they have more crisis in their family. But, you know, we've got to offer it to them. I mean, that doesn't – sure, I mean, I'm all for they've got to do their part too. I mean, I'm – but at the same time, we've got to get more – resources for people and just have them be aware of things that they can do. A lot of times there's things available, but they just don't know. You know, we're not, we need to improve communication to people. You know, we live in a very unusual time. This time will never happen again because with the onset of the internet 20 years ago, we have people that are older who really are not real connected. And then we have younger people, and that's all they've known. And then there's people like us in the middle who we remember before when we didn't have the internet or we survived. But everybody is receiving their information differently. And so many places, like in here in the county, you know, they do so much online or like during – and then you had senior citizens who don't go online, and they wanted to talk to somebody on the phone. And then you have young people who only get their information, you know, on their phone. You know, it's just, you know, as we pass on in life, society will change. But we have to remember that we have to meet people where they are, and everybody's at a different place. And we can't just put them all in one box and say, we're only going to meet you here on the internet when poor people don't have the internet and the libraries aren't open long enough for them to use it.
Right. Well, you know, the thing is now, what do you look to change or try to advance when you get on the county commission?
Well, I hope to make people more aware of different of things that they don't know about. One reason why I was running is there's nobody on the county commission or who was running who has the experiences I have. I mean, I've had a lot of business experience. I'm not an attorney. I've had my own small business for 9 years.
But you play one.
I've been a recruiter, so I know a lot about jobs. And now, so I've helped, you know, executives get jobs, middle managers, and now I help people with a criminal record get jobs. So, and I've been able to be very successful in helping them get jobs. And I've cared for elderly people. I work with the Department of Social Services often. So I mean I see people that are under their guidance or whatever because they are also overlap with some of the same people. I see mental health people every day. I sit with someone who has mental health problems. So I would like to make people more aware of some of these things. Like when I go to the county commission meeting, I often think I wish they would ask different questions than, you know, because I just know some things that I would like to ask questions about that they don't seem to be asking.
Yeah, well, as I said, you don't know what you don't know. You can't ask what you don't know to ask.
And I mean, I would like to invite them to come to where I work and meet some of the people that and talk to some of the people who have turned their life around and have gotten out of the shelter. And they're out of prison. They went to the shelter. They got out of the shelter. They have a job. You know, they have a bicycle. They're doing fine. They're working, and they're not getting in trouble. And they're, you know, they're as happy as a clam. And we, you know, there are, and they didn't. They just needed a little help to get started on, and now they're doing fine. And but I think that they probably don't know any homeless people. I know homeless people. I have their phone numbers. I talk to them. you know, I would like them to have their lives enriched by talking to people who are different. I just think that our community is so diverse, and a lot of people, you know, don't know anybody from another country. I have three Chinese girls who live with me. I'm very aware of the international, you know, the diversity we have in our county. And I just think people, you know, I would like to expose them to these things and talk about it more. And, I also think that, you know, just listening to people, there's a lot of people who just want someone to talk to them. And I just think, and they need to know more information. I mean, when I'm at the county commission meetings, I often don't leave with more information. And I would like to suggest that every meeting they have, I mean, I know I will do it. I will tell about something in the county and give information out. I mean, you know, do people know that there's a wonderful child care facility where you can go in with your child and it's only $1 and nobody goes there and it sits there? It sits there over at Hickory Grove. It's a Hickory Grove Community Center. And it's only $1. And there's a lot of people who don't have much money that could go over there and spend time and have their children play with, you know, different things. And it's a wonderful little place. But not many people know about it. And,
sure,
you know, there's a lot of things like that. There's so many summer camps in the summer from the Parks and Recreation Department that are free that, you know, I would like to see more, you know, young people involved in. But I spoke to a couple of those last summer, but I would just like to tell more people, like this business consortium that Commissioner Link is doing. It's a wonderful opportunity for a business person who's trying to start a business to come and learn how do you do business with the county or the city, and they're teaching them how to work with another business person if they can't, you know, do catering, maybe like go with another caterer, and then together they can do business, you know. But there's just so much information, but people aren't getting it. And again, you've got to meet people where they are, and they're not all on the internet. So we have to go out and talk to more groups and give more information.
Right. Well, one thing that I liked that you also said was, you know, people need to meet and experience these other cultures and not be afraid of them. Because, you know, once you do meet them and understand, there's nothing scary. You know, and there is no separation.
You know, I have every month the Uptown Democratic Forum where I have speakers. And come in from Raleigh. I had the Secretary of State, Elaine Marshall, last month, and I think I had Walter Dalton the month before. And I usually invite people that, you know, who are clients of mine to come because I want them to meet, you know, other people. And,
right.
And, I mean, I don't make the people who are there don't realize that they could be sitting next to somebody that, you know, just got out of prison. But I had a young woman do the Pledge of Allegiance at the last meeting, and she's somebody that that I've worked with, and she's going to enter the Air Force in January. And, you know, I had her do the Pledge of Allegiance and took her picture with the Secretary of State. And here's a young woman that maybe made a mistake when she was 18, but she's doing wonderful now, and she's going to serve our country. And, you know, I was so proud of her and, you know, glad that everyone was able to meet this young woman. And, you know, so I think that people, you know, they're afraid of the unknown. But if the, you know, if they get introduced to the unknown in a positive light, just like the other, you know, other people that I work with are often, I had one guy, I'll never forget, he went to prison when he was 17 and he got out when he was 29. And I invited him to come over to this luncheon, and Mayor Fox was going to speak. And I told him, you know, I'd give him a free lunch. And so he sat there, and he had his turkey sandwich, and he listened to the mayor talk, and I had a picture with him. And he met a lot of people who were elected officials. And I said, you know, what did you think about this? And he said, this was the most exciting thing I've ever done in my life. And I'm like, what? But then I thought about it. I mean, he went to prison when he was 17. He was poor. And, you know, he hasn't probably been out of his zip code.
Right.
And now, it probably was the most exciting thing he ever did, but that was also unfortunate because I wanted him to be excited about more things.
Right. Well, one of the things that I was thrilled to hear you say, I think, you know, you obviously have people skills. You obviously have a love of community, and you have a real vision of how we can build that community. But one of the most exciting things I heard you say all day is instead of waiting for, you know, the white horse to come over the horizon from somewhere else with a magical solution to our problems, if
right.
we would just sit down together, we have all the resources we need right here, and we can solve them ourselves.
That's right. And I'm so tired of hearing people say we need to bring more businesses here. You know, I mean, that's fine, but I think we have a lot of people here that can start small businesses, and
right.
I think the answers are within ourselves. And I think that we need to make things smoother. I mean, I see where someone who wants to start a business often has to wait, 60 days to get a permit from the county. That's got to get better. I mean, there's some things that the county can do to make things better because deals fall apart. I mean, I know deals fall apart, and I've worked on deals all my life. So, you know, we've got to make things, you know, more user-friendly so that if somebody wants to start a business, that they don't have to wait forever to get a permit from the city or the county to get it done. But it's a faster turnaround because that can make a huge difference to somebody starting a business. But I really believe we have UNC Charlotte here. We have Johnson & Wales. We have Queens College. We have the Charlotte School of Law. We have so much academic right here. We have a lot of educated people. We have a lot of people who care. I don't think I don't think we need to wait for the white knight to come in and rescue us. I think we can. The answers are within us. They're
right.
within us.
The knight is already here. You have your one. There are three county commission seats available, right? At-large commission seats available, correct?
Right. They are available. So there's three Republicans and three Democrats running for the three seats, and I'm hoping to be one of those three seats.
How does it look for a Democratic sweep? Or close, or at least two out of three?
Well, you know, if we look at history, I mean, historically, we have been a blue county. So, you know, if that happens again, then we're going to be in good shape.
Sure.
So, our voters are coming out, but I'm glad people are voting in early voting, but we got to get them keep coming all the way to Election Day. So, I'm optimistic. Everybody is working very hard, and, that's all we can do. I mean, we're all out there. We've been out there for months. We've been going to places. We've all been in all areas of the county, and I've talked, to zillions of people. And so I think we're working very hard. So I'm optimistic, I know that, there's already people that are on the county commissioner board right now, and hopefully this is the first time in like 25 years or 20 years that there will be three new people. So, and people have asked me about, getting along with other people. But, I mean, I finished college in 1973. I have worked with all different kinds of people. And, I mean, I certainly work with people now who don't have the best, skills in communication skills. And I just think that I have a lot of experience, and I am I'm not at all intimidated by that. Because I think if you treat people with respect and if you listen to them and if you learn about what is important to them and I'm a very strong advocate for people, but I have a business sense. So, I mean, I know we have to be careful with taxpayers' money. I mean, I'm a taxpayer too, but I mean, I've run a business before. So, I mean, you have to do what makes sense. I wish I could remodel my house and have my kitchen remodeled, but I can't afford that. So
right.
I can't do that right now. So, instead I painted it. You do what you can. But, I mean, you have to be, you have to be smart about things. So I bring a sensitivity to people and advocacy about people. And you know, I talk about being lean but not mean. And, you know, part of that is also giving people information. I mean, because I think that sometimes we are mean to people. I think the county is mean to people, and they don't give the information. And the recent revaluation is a good example of that. I listened to those people for 17 hours, and a lot of the people, yes, they did not like that they had to pay more taxes, but more than anything, they felt dissed. They wanted someone to just explain it to them. Just like I often use as an example, if you had a loved one suddenly pass away, and the doctor said, I'm sorry, you know, your cousin died, and they never told you what happened, you would immediately want to say, well, what happened? He was fine yesterday. You just want to know. And it's the same thing. When they got these tax bills, they just wanted to know, how did this happen? And they tried so hard to get information, and the county did not do a good job of explaining how the patient died or how the taxes went up. Instead, they just sent a postcard that said, no change in value. You know, that's it. We're not changing it. And people were so frustrated. They just wanted information. And that was mean. You know, that was mean. And I think that I was, and I have said that we have all these people who feel dissed who are now, we have to rebuild trust with them because they're not going to trust anything because they felt like they got the shaft and they did. And again, it wasn't so much, I mean, definitely it included the taxes, but it included more that they felt disrespected. They felt dissed. Nobody answered their questions. And that's just what they wanted. They just wanted to know what happened. Are you still there?
Okay. Pat, we had a little technical difficulty here.
Okay.
On our end. So, because I don't think I lost you. I think I just lost you on my end. So everything you were saying was probably going across. But anyway, what I was saying, could you just repeat the last, what you were just saying?
Well, what I was just saying that in the recent revaluation, a lot of people felt dissed. They felt they did not get respect or the information they wanted. Yes, they were upset about the taxes. But as I listened to people, I heard more complaints that they didn't get a callback, their letters weren't answered. No one would talk to them. And that was mean. We have to stop doing that. We have to give people information. And I think that the county could do better, and we're going to have to rebuild trust with all these hundreds of people who felt, you know, very dissed by the county and felt like nobody was listening to them. And so people are going to need to be listened to because we just went through something where a lot of people didn't feel that they were listened to. And, you know, I think that communication, I've always been a strong communicator. I studied, you know, journalism when I was in college. So I think it's important, but we have to communicate. But again, we have to meet people where they are. And that means maybe having one person who only handles senior citizens and they can learn to talk to them and answer their questions. Whereas, you know, a young person may want to send an email. Or they want to look it up on a website. So but we have to be smart about this.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things we were talking about, the court systems and stuff of that nature, the legal process with the judge a moment ago, but one of the things that she echoed, just like you're saying here, a key component of what your job is, regardless of what you're technically doing, is to listen and then to educate as well. So that's what kind of you're talking about. If you could just simply explain the process to people, a lot of their fear would go away, a lot of their misunderstanding.
Right. And they're people are reasonable. I mean, if you talk to them about, you know, this is the situation, you know, this is what our choices are, I have much more optimism and belief in people. If you just explain to them, most people are very reasonable. But if they don't have the information, then they can't make a good decision, and they're totally confused, and they feel, you know, not connected at all with anybody.
And right.
I think that we have, and I have to say, I have tried in recent months to call the county to get information. And I was shocked at how difficult it was and how poorly the people responded to me when I was trying to get some information. And I was not trying to get anything real complicated. But, you know, reporters would call and ask me a question, and then I would call and just say, I just have a quick question about this one simple thing. And
right.
I was shocked how, but see, that's a training issue. People can be, I mean, I used to teach customer service training, you know, at Harris Teeter years ago and at other places where I worked. And that can be taught, but there has to be a reason to do it. But I think that we have to be, you know, more professional, and we have to remember that the citizens are the reason that, you know, for their jobs. So they have to treat them, you know, much better and answer their questions and not just, you know, I was shocked how poorly they responded to me, even though told them I was running for county commission, and I thought, oh, my.
You're talking about the county commission.
I called the county, and I told them I was running for the office, the county commissioner, and I just had a question about something, some issue I wanted to learn. Where would I go? I couldn't find it on the website. And I was kind of shocked how they talked to me. Like, I don't answer that question. You got to call somebody else.
Well, you should have told me
that's what you wanted. You know, I was like, what?
The problem that I find with that is because that – we are still acting like we are Mayberry. We are a large city now where there are hundreds and hundreds of times more people, and we need to be able to answer people. Here, before when I was in Mayberry, you answer the person if you want a yes or no, because the person couldn't do anything about it. We need one government here that's run by the mayor and a city council or a county commission combined, and we need to be able to focus on not having these cowboys that think they're all in charge of their own little fiefdom. They need to be able to have somebody in charge and say, hey, look, this is what you're supposed to do. This is customer relations. You're working in customer relations. If you don't like it, you're fired. I mean, well, we don't have that now. I mean, everybody does what they want to do. And then you call to get help. You can't get help. Because, hey, if they're busy, I'm busy. I don't care about you.
Right. And then if you add to that where you don't have much education, or you don't have a computer, or you're 79 years old.
Right.
And you don't know anything about the Internet. And you get a robotic call, press 1, press 2. Again, we've got to meet people where they are, and they're not all at the same place.
Speaking about that, I mean, you are the mother of a young lady who sort of changed how the state looks at things like that.
Yes, she has, and I'm very proud of her, and she has done a wonderful job in the North Carolina House. It's Representative Tricia Cochran, who represents East Charlotte and Matthews. And I'm very proud of her. And she has done an excellent job in communicating with people.
Absolutely.
And we talk all the time. And, you know, I go to her. I mean, you know, you can learn, you know, a lot of older people don't realize you can learn so much from a young person. Always be trying to learn. And those of us who are older, we need to be learning every day. And I learn every day. And we can learn a lot from young people. And as young people.
Just so a week or so ago, Mike was learning how to tweet.
That's right. I was just learning how to tweet. You know, hey, listen, when I was teaching school, my first thing I said to my kids the second or first day is, hey, look, we are here I am here to learn from you as well as you to learn from me.
That's right.
Well, we understand
that.
I don't know everything about how you understand what I'm saying. You may not. So we need to learn how to communicate here. Listen, I learn from my 4-year-old grandson every time he comes over here, and my 6-year-old.
Sure.
I can't believe what they know that I don't know. And they think they can con me that I don't know it, which is even worse.
That's right. That's right. You're right. But we have to be, I have always been a curious person. I have a lot of curiosity. And, you know, I have, whenever young people say, you know, give me some advice, I always say, be more curious, ask more questions, you know, learn about things that are different. Be open to talking to somebody totally different than you are.
And that's the problem that we had with George W. Bush. He was not curious. And if Mitt Romney gets in, we will have the same thing over again.
It would be worse. It would probably be worse.
It's worse.
It would be worse.
Tell us how we can get in touch with you to send you some money or to volunteer or to do something to help you.
Well, my name is Pat Cotham. Are you still there?
I'm still here. Don't be afraid. Just tell us how we can do it.
Okay, well, my website and my email is just my name at Gmail, patcotham@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. My Twitter account is DNCPatNC because I'm one of 7 DNC members. So it's DNCPatNC. I'm there again. I started to tweet, Michael, because we got to meet people where they are, and that's where a lot of young people are. And
well, I just,
you know, I do that as well. And my email is just patcotham@gmail.com. My cell phone is 704-506-3056, and I work at the Center for Community Transitions. It's a wonderful nonprofit that does wonderful work to helping people for 35 years who have been in prison, and I'm very proud to work there, and the people I work with inspire me.
We need to do a show on that, because that in itself is it's something that needs to be talked about.
Right. And we also have 30 women that are still incarcerated. This is interesting. We have the only nonprofit work release place in the whole state of North Carolina right here in Mecklenburg County. And we have 30 women at the end of incarceration, many of whom have college degrees. And they work in Mecklenburg County. They ride the bus. And we as taxpayers aren't paying for them anymore. They're paying their own way because the salaries they make goes to pay for their room and board. And then any money, that they put some money aside for any child care expenses or they have fines, and then we put some money aside so when they are released, they have a little money that they can put a down payment on an apartment or get a car or something like that. And that is a wonderful thing. And again, it's the women are discriminated against in prison. It's just like they are in the real world. Here in Mecklenburg, we do have one place. It's the only way. You can look on the Department of Corrections and see it. It's the only one in the whole state. It's right here in Mecklenburg County up near the university. And the women there are amazing. And they are inspiring women. And and they work, you know, they quietly work and do their jobs and reconnect with their families. And that's another thing that the nonprofit where I work that we do. And it's, you know, it is amazing to see someone, you know, turn their life around. And they're just so humble and so inspiring. And they have a big garden out there and they got registered as a wildlife for wild birds, and they do all this, you know. And I found some a couple of weeks ago. I saw at my church. I go to St. Matthew's Catholic Church. Some women that did knitting, and I asked them. I said, "Would you ever be willing to come to a women's prison and teach the women how to knit?" and they were, because they have a lot of time on their hands. And so some women from the church are going to go out there and teach the ladies who want to know how to knit. And see, that's just an example of, you know, giving a person an opportunity to do something that, you know, if you just ask them. But they didn't know anything about it until I asked them, and now they're doing it.
I think that's fabulous because I'm on the parish council at Lady of Consolation, and I'm the head of communications over there. I think maybe we should have some of our ladies go out there and get in contact with you, see what they can do.
And, you know, another thing, here's something else that senior citizens can do, is to just to call someone who just got a new job. How was your day? How was your new job? A lot of these folks don't have much support from their family, and especially the women that are in the prison. But if they could just have a kind word from someone, you know, a senior citizen, who would just call them once a week, how's your job doing? How's it going with your family? You know, just some I would like us to be more kind. kind to each other.
Well, I know you got to go, and we are going to have another call coming in here, but I wanted to talk to you about Mr. Romney and how the Progressive Party has been treating women during this campaign season, but that's another whole new show.
That's another show.
But I want you to come back because I want you to talk about the job that you just spoke about in the with the women in the prisons.
Maybe we could have a few of the women
on. Maybe we could have we could do it. I could do it remotely. We could have some of the ladies on and talk about how this has changed their life. Maybe, you know, if you could get together, I'd get together with you. We could work out something.
Well, maybe so. And then there's a couple of them that just, you know, were released. And so I think we could work something out. But, their voices, they're our neighbors too, Michael. They're our neighbors. They're our neighbors.
Well,
so I'd like us to all be more aware that everybody is our neighbor, and we need to be sensitive and be concerned about all of our neighbors.
Right.
Thank you so much for your time. I didn't mean to talk so long, but thank you for the work you're doing.
A lot of information, and we need to get back with you because there's so much other information we can get from you that you can give the audience. And this is being heard here in Shaw. It's being heard around the world. So there's a lot of people who need to notice.
At patcotham.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and I'm very happy to be on your show, and continued success to you. And let's all vote. Everybody, let's all vote.
Get out and vote. Absolutely. Thank you, Pat.
All right. Thank you. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
And that was Pat Cotham.
For County Commissioner at Large.
County Commissioner at Large. QBA, as a matter of fact, the one that gets the highest vote total, which I didn't have a chance to say, who normally is the chair of the county commission.
Awesome. So let's vote for Pat and get
so she could be chair of the county commission.
Care about our community, I think.
And speaking about Romney. About Romney, let me tell you what he said.
I wanted to get back to something we had said a minute ago. That I was browsing through this and your timeline from Romhill. So I'm looking at this. You know what you said about him going, Obama leads from behind.
Yes, leads from behind. Yes.
This blew my mind. This is him in 2011, early 2011, saying it was pathetic, you know, how in Libya, he was leading from behind.
Oh, yeah,
He's being a Mandela.
Right.
Okay. October 2011. This quote right here.
Yes.
10/28/2011. He says, quote, I don't think America should play the role of the leader of the Middle East peace process.
Well,
my inclination is to follow the guidance of our ally, Israel. What the heck?
Well,
don't lead from behind.
Don't
let's
lead.
Follow.
That's right. Let's follow.
What?
Let's give you another little thing that he also said to that.
This is a president who should have instead communicated to Iran that we are prepared, that we are considering military options. They're not just on the table, they are in our hand.
The president should have built credible threat of military action. When they see our military option in our hand, a possible blockade or possible aerial strikes, they recognize we mean business.
Now, this is a guy who was belligerent about how much we need to really, I mean, put it to these Iranians and to everybody else.
All them foreigners.
All them foreigners. And here's a guy who then started at his last debate. He agreed with every single thing the president said.
Yeah.
Listen to this.
It's also essential for us to understand what our mission is in Iran, and that is to dissuade Iran from having a nuclear weapon through peaceful and diplomatic means. We want a peaceful planet. We want people to be able to enjoy their lives and know they're going to have a bright and prosperous future and not be at war. I want to see peace.
Who the heck is this masked man? Who is this masked man? 1 minute he said, oh, we need to blow him up. We need to make sure these people understand who we are. Now he wants peace at all costs.
What, does he have beads, long hair?
Well,
raggedy jeans?
Maybe he does have beads and long hair. I mean, let me tell you what Wesley Clark, General Wesley Clark, who is the NATO Supreme Allied Commander. He was also, I was the head of his volunteers for his election when he ran for president.
Exactly.
Here in the state. That's how we met, right. Let me tell you what Wesley Clark said about Romney's foreign policy.
From last night's debate was, I had heard for months Governor Romney talk about how much tougher he was going to be than Obama, and criticizing Obama because, you know, Democrats are always supposed to be weak and so forth. And yet when it came right down to putting his cards on the table, he couldn't do it. He backed away from it and fell in on the president's positions. And that says two things. That says, number one, that he doesn't have the real alternative foreign policy that he claimed to have. But number two, it says to our allies, what does he really think? What are his positions? You know, he made a big pitch about being reliable and consistent and so forth. Well, he undercut his whole aim in that debate. Now, I know why he did it. He didn't want to leave any edge out there that could be seized on and criticized. He wanted to be as soft and nice and clean as he could be so the women's vote would come his way. He didn't want to talk hawkish. But, you know, that's being a politician. That's not being a leader. He was a politician last night. We have a president who's a commander-in-chief and a leader. It's a huge difference.
A huge difference.
And a leader.
And a leader.
Now, look, this is a guy who constantly says that Obama's wrong. He's soft. He's an apologist. He goes around kowtowing to every other nation. And then, my favorite, is he likes to say that Obama has ushered in an entire era of military decline in America. Military decline. Now look, that's that hawkishness that they're talking about. Where's that forcefulness in Romney? Okay? Romney's got to come in and correct this horrible military decline we're in. With what? Peace world?
Well, let's hear what the General Colin Powell said about him.
Will you endorse President Obama this race?
Well, you know, I voted for him in 2008, and I plan to stick with him in 2012, and I'll be voting for Vice President Joe Biden next month. Not only am I not comfortable with what Governor Romney is proposing for his economic plan, I have concerns about his views on foreign policy. I mean, it's a moving target. One day he has a certain strong view about staying in Afghanistan, but then on Monday night he agrees with the withdrawal. Same thing in Iraq. On almost every issue that was discussed on Monday night, Governor Romney agreed with the president with some nuances. But this is quite a different set of foreign policy views than he had earlier in the campaign. And my concern, which I've expressed previously in a public way, is that sometimes I don't sense that he has thought through these issues as thoroughly as he should have. There are other issues as well, not just the economy and foreign policy. I'm more comfortable with President Obama and his administration when it comes to issues like, what are we going to do about climate? What are we going to do about immigration? What are we going to do about education? Lots of things like that. I also saw the president get us out of one war, start to get us out of a second war, and did not get us into any new wars. And finally, I think that the actions he has taken with respect to protecting us from terrorism have been very, very solid. And so I think we ought to keep on the track that we are on.
No. What can you tell me here about that?
That is awesome.
The POW Doctrine. It was the general.
And this is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. This is our commander of U.S. armed forces throughout the entire Gulf War. This is a national security advisor. This was the
Joint Chiefs of Staff commander.
Secretary of State, even under a Republican president. Okay? This man says, I see a leader. I see a commander in chief. I see someone who's winning the war on terror, and I see someone who knows how to fight wars.
Absolutely.
Now, who are we going to believe? Mr. Peacenik?
Or your lion eyes? Or Mr. Peacenik?
Generals in modern history.
Well, you know, here's the thing. That who do we need to believe?
Mm-hmm.
Who do we need to believe? This is the problem. And we have another caller right now. Let's see who this is. Hello, and who
Hello.
Might this be? Hello.
Hi, Michael.
Oh, is this Nancy Shacker?
Nancy Shacker. This is Nancy Shacker calling in. How are you?
By the Nancy Shacker from Fayetteville.
Mighty Fayetteville. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Well, you know, I'm doing very well. A little tired. We've been working very hard.
And you're down there trying to get Mr. Antonio Blue as a write-in candidate elected?
Well, I'm not in the 8th District anymore. Cumberland County is no longer in the 8th District.
Yeah, we got me and you and the other chickens got booted out.
Yeah, we are gone, you know, but not forgotten. There are a number of people very close by who are working on behalf of Antonio Blue. My understanding is, and Antonio is being quite effective, I think, his campaign. It's a very low-to-the-ground campaign, but you can tell the effectiveness by the kickback that you're getting from the other Democratic candidate.
Uh-huh.
Putting out big, I understand they're doing robocalls telling people that President Barack Obama and former President Bill Clinton are throwing their support to Congressman Kissel.
Mm-hmm.
I think that probably is not true. It's not anywhere on a blog or on school or in a newspaper or anywhere.
No, that's somebody's imagination.
You think it's an imaginary thing, but we don't want voters to be confused.
Nope.
So that needs to be clarified. I don't know who would put out that kind of a story. It's particularly interesting, Michael, given the fact that the DNC decided, the Democratic National Committee decided to not put money into Congressman Kissel's campaign.
Yeah,
he was scheduled to get $1 million, I understand, and they've decided not to. I think that's an interesting scenario.
It was rubles. It wasn't dollars. It was rubles.
Rubles?
Rubles, yeah.
Sometimes money speaks louder than words, right?
Rubles speak louder than words.
Who else is on the line there?
Oh, that's Thomas Fortenberry.
Hi.
I don't know
if you heard any of this past conversation we just had, but
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Come on, now you got to come on this show. You got to be up to date with what's going on.
I mean, it's hard to hear you. You know, if you don't open up the airwaves so that I could hear you. I apologize. What was the topic of discussion?
One of your good friends, Mitt Romney.
Oh, okay.
and he is so, you don't know where to start when you talk about him. But this guy, we just saw a piece about where General Powell just went down the list, bam, 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 about why Mitt Romney needs to be seen and not heard.
Right. There's a lot of discussion of that, on the pundits. And, you know, they want to reduce it to, he's supporting him because he's black. It's much deeper than that. It's interesting. Yes. The loudest person who's speaking that language, although he sort of backpedaled on it, is John Sununu.
Oh, please. Can you say, listen, now wait.
An Arab American himself.
I want to get there, but I didn't want to talk about that yet. I wanted to talk about this first. Listen.
Boop. Mm-hmm.
I went to a number of women's groups and said, can you help us find folks? And they brought us whole binders full of women.
Are you one of the binders full of women?
But your binders has a few meanings for women. But
Well, now here is
I'm not bound.
Oh, you're not bound. Okay. Well, here is something else I want you to think about also. Now listen to this.
Planned Parenthood, we're going to get rid of that.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tell me, what does Planned Parenthood and why would this moo-moo want to get rid of Planned Parenthood? He says because of all the abortions that they do. I mean, they do so many abortions, they can't get out of their own way.
I know. That's actually not true.
Come on.
I didn't know. Planned Parenthood serves many other purposes, most of which are not abortions. In our area, the Planned Parenthood centers, 95% of the work they do is in education. They do a great amount of work. 3 million women who rely on Planned Parenthood, because if you don't have money, and, of course, that means the people who are in that 47% don't have a lot of money. They rely on Planned Parenthood in order to have high-quality care. And that care includes wellness exams, breast examinations, breast health care, contraception, and diagnosis and treatment of sexually transmitted infections.
Well,
so, and we also work, I know in our area, the Planned Parenthood works a great deal with young teenagers to teach them how to take care of themselves and to be healthy. We have in Fayetteville, and I know that in other parts, particularly of the eastern part of the state and in the mountains, you have a high incidence of sexually transmitted diseases. People need to be educated. In fact, the pregnancy rate, the unintended pregnancy rate, has been consistently dropping. So whoever he is playing to and whatever the folks who believe that Planned Parenthood is a terrible thing and it's trying to destroy communities and so on, are really, really off point, and it is controlling women's bodies. It's an attempt to control women's bodies rather than allowing women to control their own bodies.
One of the things I want to ask you, now you're in Fayetteville, a major, major hometown for the military. There's a lot of females in the military, so if they're not allowed to have contraception, how can they be in the military any longer? Oh, they're just supposed to say, just say no?
Well, I mean, that's the assumption, and we know that just say no, or the idea of no sex does not work. It didn't work. It hasn't worked since the beginning of time, it won't work now.
Listen,
in the Republican world, even in cases of rape, you can just magically not get pregnant.
That's right. I want you to listen to this, Nancy, and I want you to tell me what you think about it.
I recognize that if you're going to have women in the workforce, that sometimes they need to be more flexible. My chief of staff, for instance, had two kids that were still in school. She said, I can't be here until 7 or 8 o'clock at night. I need to be able to get home at 5 o'clock so I can be there for making dinner for my kids and being with them when they get home from school. So he said, fine. Let's have a flexible schedule so you can have hours that work for you. We're going to have employers in the new economy, in the economy I'm going to bring to play, that are going to be so anxious to get good workers, they're going to be anxious to hire women.
So that means that you women need to get home and cook dinner, because you can't be out there working with us men, because, you know, we work some strong hours, long hours. And we know you all need got other obligations.
Mm.
I mean, and then if you go home, you can get pregnant and stay there with the kids.
Have more kids.
That sounds like something for me from the past.
It does. It's embarrassing.
It is
embarrassing. I mean, how do you even respond to something like that? First of all, you know, women. Many of the women who would be and should be making the same kind of incomes and working the same way as men are not going home cooking dinner and baking cookies.
Right.
You know, they have housekeepers for that. And I think the women that he's talking about that he would hire are not those ladies. But it's such a put down, and it's such an obvious attempt to play women and minorities into some role that existed 50, 100 years ago, more than 100 years ago, and to sort of go back to that kind of mentality. It's just very sad. We're not there anymore, and no one's going to go back.
Well, that's the thing that I thought was most telling about it. I talked about this a little bit earlier, but the fact that Romney says if women are allowed to the workplace as if they're not. And then he says, that's the kind of economy I'm going to bring. You know, when I get in office, I'm going to bring a flexible world where women can rush home and cook dinner. I mean, it's like he's living in weird alternative past world that doesn't exist, and then talking about creating a world which doesn't exist and is embarrassing. I can't quite get my head around what he's even saying.
It also has to do with privilege. If you have lived with privilege all your life, then you can assume certain things about everyone's life. And I think that there is a real limitation on the part of that candidate in having any concept whatsoever of what really working class women deal with, because he's never dealt with it. You know,
right.
I doubt if he's ever been in a supermarket. Was he the one that said he'd never been in a supermarket? You know, it's just amazing because he has no concept. So he's used to people who are well-to-do, wealthy, and they can make choices or not make choices. Most of them can choose to stay home.
Oh, is it his wife?
We just talked about Ann Romney shopping at Costco's. She says, I go to Costco's and I spend for the five sons, and they bring over their family, which is 30 of us, and I go to Costco's and spend $137 and feed everybody. I get these frozen spinach bags, and I get some frozen custard Stay Puffs. Listen, what dream world is she in? I went to the store, the food line, 3 days ago, it's been $149, and I ate the food the same night. So I don't know
Michael, you're greedy. But really, I mean, I know people who have access to a lot of money, and they're just amazed at the cost of food. And then there are other people who are getting like $10 a month in food stamps because they have so little. And I mean, $10 a month is not going to buy you very much food in today's world.
The military is getting a lot of our vets, a lot of our soldiers in active duty are getting food stamps.
Yes, they are.
Yes. It is already, that's not talked about.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And that he talked about. I mean, so when this woman, Ann Romney, says that she shops for all 30, spend $137, and she says, oh, and Mitt is not a picky eater. He'll eat anything you put in front of him. And what he cuts in front of the line when we're having the family buffet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you think? Is that supposed to say, oh, they're just like us?
Yeah, that's what it is supposed to say. That's the whole idea of that kind of conversation. We're really not, you know, we're really in touch with you. You're 47.
But, you know.
Listen, Mike, here's one thing I want to remind people I was talking about. I think she hit the nail on the head completely when you said it's a life of privilege. She has no conception. You know, Romney doesn't know what he's talking about with women's real life. Just as before that, talking about with, you know, Ann going to Costco, which I think is a farce to begin with. The reality was, you know, earlier in the year, there was an IRS scandal because he didn't report all their maids' salaries.
Yeah.
He did one of the maids, even though this guy is worth $22 million for the books, Romney.
$22 million? No, over $500 million.
Yeah, but $22 million is what he was reporting on that. Even though he did that, he had a staff. Four women for his wife, four maids. Most of which he was paid, he had one, the head was $8,000, and then the others, you were $4,000 and $2,000 a year.
Can you believe that? I mean, that's what he pays them?
That was there.
I believe it. Sure.
Talking about women as if they're from outer space, when his wife has four domestic maids on staff.
And you talk about how hard you're working to, you know, as a housewife to take care of the household. I mean, if I could get half a person in here to help me with a full-time job and as a single parent and so on, a quarter of a person would have been good.
I
think it's so ridiculous. And then it appeals, though, to many people who may go against their own best interest.
Right.
And that is for me, is the big question. Why in the world would you vote for someone who clearly is clearly not interested in your best interest? If you are part of the 47% or 50% of this country that is either very poor or moderately poor, or even well-to-do, having a decent job, it still puts you, it takes a little while to get to that upper 50%.
You think?
It takes a little income. Why would you then vote for someone whose policies are going to take you back to where we were at the precipice of the whole country falling? That does not make sense.
Now, the precipice, where the females were going out in the back alleys and getting coat hangers, dying. Let me play you one other thing here.
I would welcome a circumstance where there was such a consensus in this country that we said we don't want to have abortion in this country at all, period. That'd be wonderful. I'd be delighted.
Chris, would you sign that bill?
Let me say it. I'd be delighted to sign that bill.
Mm-hmm.
He would be delighted. And if you don't think... If women who are listening don't think that this man, if he became president, would sign every right-wing judge against abortion in the first time he gets a chance, you are crazy.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, we continue to use the term abortion as though
right.
the as though abortion is the key operative of, say, for example, Planned Parenthood. But it isn't.
That's right.
It is women's health. And, for example, in Durham, the state General Assembly cut, I think it was $1.4 million from the budget for the Durham office of Planned Parenthood. That money ultimately was replaced with federal dollars, the amount of $4 million. The thing is, that clinic services men, women, and children as a health clinic, not as an abortion clinic. And, you know, they use the keywords, these buzzwords, to make people respond. Abortion, oh, no, I don't support abortion. Well, I don't. I think if you don't believe in abortion, never have one. But if you believe in women being allowed to have health care and men being allowed, because men have cancers also, that can get testing and care, then you would support Planned Parenthood. Some people want to go back to its origins, and Margaret Sanger was a eugenicist. There's no question about it. She believed, as many people today do, in the superiority of white people, not poor white people.
That's right.
You know, and definitely not people of color. So her motivations were to have a purer race, a purer group of superior people, which she considered herself a part of. That was the beginnings, and that was part of the history of Planned Parenthood. That's not who it is today. And we could look at a lot of institutions that started out one way and have become something very, very different. And I think that Planned Parenthood is one of those.
Well, Lucille Riches was on TVS last night, I believe it was, and she was talking about this. She said that everyone, and that includes men, need to be aware how scary the situation is with the Murdochs and the Ryans and the Aikens, because Mitt Romney doesn't care one way or the other. He is not a true believer. They are true believers.
Right.
And
we have some serious issues in the South. Half of the people living with HIV in the United States reside in the South. North Carolina is one of the top 10 states for HIV diagnosis. I mean, you know, what do you do? Just act as though that doesn't mean anything, or, you know, it's
right.
Unimportant?
Bury your head in the sand, or you do something about it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, these diagnoses for the highest rates of AIDS, HIV and AIDS, are here in North Carolina. We can pretend that it's not so, but it's very serious and very dangerous. This, by the way, comes out of the North Carolina AIDS report, which ran from March 2010 to 2012. And it's the Communicable Disease Branch report. And this is just for Cumberland County. But we know the statewide, we have a high AIDS report here in Cumberland County. But we also
know
this.
We are at the end. You know, we need to have you back because I want to continue this conversation. And how can people get in touch with you if they want to find out more information?
About the HIV, about the Planned Parenthood?
Yes.
They can reach me at 910-527-5441. You know, my day job is actually working for voter rights and so on. By the way, we've had to extend hours here in Cumberland County because the lines have been so long. That the Board of Elections was petitioned, and they've extended voting hours in four of our early voting sites.
Uh-huh.
Well, take care, Ms. Shaker.
Well,
thank you. I hope so. And, Michael, thank you so much for having me on.
We're going to have you back.
Okay, great. You know, I always love talking with you. Okay.
And when you see Larry Kissel, tell him hello to me.